mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, 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 and thank you for joining us. It is the 8th day of December, 2008. We're going to be live here for the next 4 hours today. Paul Watson's going to join us for just about 5 minutes with his top news story today. It's up on prisonplanet.com. Former ISI chief, Mubai and 9/11, both inside jobs. He said that on CNN yesterday to CNN's Horror. So that is coming up. We have the transcript of that. We can't find the video yet, but the transcript from CNN and a story Paul Watson did about it up on prisonplanet.com. Also, Taliban now circle Kabul over in Afghanistan. Arrest provides more evidence. India, Israel, and the U.S. behind Mumbai attacks by Kurt Nemo at Infowars.com. And Rice is saying U.S. will act against alleged Mumbai perpetrators if Pakistan will not. McCain warns Pakistan of Indian military attacks that are forthcoming soon. Obama unveils his 21st century New Deal. We'll be getting into that and a lot more today. On the guest front, again, we have Paul Watson joining us, a really interesting fellow named Sam Damewood, to lay out some of the history of the Founding Fathers, the militias. And they have an organization that's nationwide training thousands of people just basically in rifletry, the bedrock of what this nation was founded on. Sam Damewood will be joining us coming up in 1 hour. Haven't had her on in years. Betty Martini will join us after that. Mission Possible International, who in many nations has gotten, with all the great activists out there, aspartame banned, or at least warnings on many of the labels. That has not been done here in the United States, but the fight intensifies as more evidence comes out of how deadly aspartame is in tens of thousands of different products and foods. You can't even get regular chewing gum now without it, even if it's not sugar-free. All the major brands have aspartame and sugar. And then we have John Watkins coming on, his maiden voyage with us. He's the guy that has the Enough Respect video channel with tens of millions of views with the videos that he has produced, who's been under YouTube and Google and other forms of censorship. So I thought we'd get into web censorship in the last 30 minutes of the show today. So Paul Watson, Sam Damewood, Betty Martini, and John Watkins coming up today. We will have open phones when John Watkins is on with us about the history of the militia in this country and the attack on the culture. This nation has a gun culture and why it is under attack. If you love the Second Amendment, you know, you're called evil, wicked, redneck. They say that it's because you have a small member. I mean, I literally hear that on the radio every couple of days from, quote, liberal talk show hosts. Nothing liberal about them. If they were true liberals, they'd be for the Second Amendment. As one of the greatest supporters of it, Thomas Jefferson was, of course. And then John Watkins, Enough Respect, YouTube channel, literally in just the last few years. I mean, he's got videos. Some of his videos have like 4 or 5 million views. He's got hundreds of videos. I mean, add that together, it's in the tens of millions of people. Tens, I mean, it's got to be 30-plus million. I haven't counted them up. But 3 million for this, 5 million for that, 2 million for this video. Just showing you what you can do to reach out and wake people up. So he is joining us from the United Kingdom today as well. We will go directly to Paul Watson after the break. And then Obama, don't stock up on guns. He's told newspapers and national television, oh, no, I'm not coming after your guns. I do want to restrict them, though, and that's reasonable. Please don't buy guns. I'm not in power yet. I can't ban them yet. No, don't get firearms. Oh, my God. My million-man intelligence force will have more trouble taking you to the gulags, the work camps, literally. The regular army on the streets, the foreign troops filling up the ranks of the army, as reported by AP on Saturday with Secretary of Defense Gates announcing it. How will we enslave you, you bitter clingers? Oh, how will I enslave you? Liberals voice concerns about Obama from Politico. Obama plans largest building program since 1950s. Yeah, the 83 NAFTA superhighways. And a lot more. Stay with us. Big broadcast lined up for you today. The websites are Infowars.net, JonesReport.com, TruthNews.us, PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.com, and PrisonPlanet.com. Stay with us. Hardcore transmission straight ahead.
From his
Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Every day, I probably, without even looking, see, 20-plus news stories with government industry studies, leaked government studies that say things just like this. Pesticides, gender-bending people. And it says evolution is being distorted by pollution, which damages genitals and the ability to father offsprings, as a new study, Jeffrey Lean reports, London Independent. The male gender is endangered, just what we've been telling you for years. I mean, over 80% sperm count down in the entire Western world. But then the Amish don't have it. The Amish don't have the Alzheimer's. They don't have the autism. They don't have the different medical problems that now millions of American little boys have, where their testicles never develop. They stay in their body like ovaries and never drop. You can go pull up all the medical documentation on that. The male gender is in danger with incalculable consequences for both humans and wildlife. Startling scientific research from around the world reveals. And then it goes into just thousands of reports. It is a fact. Look, people can spin things and say genetically modified, genetically engineered food is good for you, and it's all just liberal propaganda, you know, greeny weeny. People can spin things and say that these pesticides aren't hurting people. They can spin things and say melamine, that they've always admitted is deadly and causes kidney failure and liver failure, is now supposedly good for you. It's okay for you. Despite the fact it builds up in you and kills you deader than a hammer. People can try to spin the fact that we've gone from 1 in 33 dying of cancer to now 1 in 3 females and 1 in 2 males dying of it. Cancer was very rare 50 years ago. Now it's just everywhere. I have somebody working in my office, a great guy, and is a really nice 23-year-old girlfriend, and she is dying of intestinal cancer. She is got diagnosed about 6 months ago. They went and removed a bunch of her insides, came back. She's on super hardcore chemo that kills most people. She's 23 years old, beautiful, smart young lady. Hopefully she makes it. They say she's got a very low chance. Pray for. The point is that it's everywhere. In the last two neighborhoods I lived in, multiple children on my street died of cancer. Okay? This is real. Now, the mainline liberals, they just want to ban your fireplace, ban your bottled water, steal your farm, your ranch, you know, tax you for your cows, passing gas, and then the real tyrannies, the regulators that come on your property, the harassers. Meanwhile, none of the real environmental problems are even being addressed. When you start mixing fish genes with mammals and insect genes with mammals and putting them in plants, you can change the one thing you want. You can make the tomato sit there and stay red and juicy for 3 weeks after it should be rotten. You can make a potato taste better and last longer. But when you randomly change that one gene, it randomly changes thousands of others. They sit there with gene guns firing DNA into thousands of cells and randomly splicing just to see what happens. And it ends up on your dinner table. This is Armageddon, ladies and gentlemen, biologically. Now, we have the clip of this now. It just came in. We didn't have it earlier, but Paul Watson will post it in his PrisonPlanet.com story, shifting gears into our top story today. And I really can't do justice to this unless I give you some background briefly. It is admitted fact that the CIA created Al-Qaeda in the late 1970s. That was the name of the CIA computer file for Wahhabist Mujahideen fighters all over the Middle East and Central Asia. As Brzezinski's written in two of his books, the founder of Al-Qaeda with his protege Bill Gates, current Secretary of Defense. And they brag and state they created Muslim military brigades, corps. Who was attacking the Christians in Sudan to block the Christians and to run them out of the country? because the Christians are siding with the Chinese to move in to get oil. Al-Qaeda. Who was used to attack the Serbs in Kosovo? When they finally fought back, the news spun it and claimed that the Serbs had snuck attacked the Muslims. Just like they claimed that the Russians had snuck attacked Georgia. Total lie. But they got away with it. Al-Qaeda. U.S. government-funded Senate report. Who was used to overthrow the Shah? That's right. Documents declassified. The Shah was actually removed by the West. Ayatollah Khomeini put in. Who actually ran that operation? Bill Gates, now Secretary of Defense, under Brzezinski. Who was used to attack the Russians in 79 to precipitate them coming in and occupying Afghanistan? Who was attacking Russian-controlled areas in the north? Al-Qaeda. Who has been, for the last 8 months, trying to kill the new Indian peace deals with Pakistan by trying to kill the government of Pakistan that's been doing peace overtures and arresting members of their intelligence agencies who work for the West and actually going after the Muslim terrorist, the Wahhabist? Who's trying to kill them? Al-Qaeda. Who was Western intelligence involved in train bombings and the mass shootings? Confirmed Indian newspapers. Anti-terror police in India arresting army captains and others. And police counterintelligence officers who really work for Western intelligence and were running and handling the Al-Qaeda groups. Again, Al-Qaeda. Anywhere they need to stir up trouble, cause a crisis, Al-Qaeda. Who bombed the World Trade Center in 1993? Who brought over? An Egyptian intelligence agent named Ahmad Salam told him he was going to build a dummy bomb. He went and founded and led a group of literal Muslims who were literally morons, listed by the city as low-grade morons, borderline retarded, below 80 IQs. Then they told him, no, cook a real bomb. That'll make it stick in court better. Then they said, no, go ahead, here's the detonators. Then he came in and said, okay, let's bust them. And they said, no, the bombing goes forward. He knew they were setting him up, so he recorded close to 12 hours of the FBI telling him to do it. That's why it was in the New York Times and CBS. He knew they were setting him up. What was that? Al-Qaeda, CIA. Over and 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 over. Confirmed. Who got caught last Monday? Reuters, Der Spiegel. Staging terror attacks in Kosovo against NATO bases. German intelligence was caught by NATO police. On record, confirmed, admitted, Reuters headline, German intelligence caught staging bombings. You understand, ladies and gentlemen? There are so many examples of this, and I could go on and on and on. I'm only going to spend a few minutes with him because I've got a lot of other issues I want to get to, and Paul's very busy on some other stories. But headline on PrisonPlanet.com, former ISI chief, Mubai and 9/11, both inside jobs. Let's bring up Paul Watson. Paul Watson, very important story.
Hello, Alex. Yeah, this is the former ISI chief from 87 to 89 when Benazir Bhutto was the prime minister. So obviously there are two different factions in Pakistan, one of which is allied with the neocons, which was Musharraf. And the other one, which was Benazir Bhutto, who was killed when she banged her head on a car sunroof.
Does it matter if she was machine-gunned on TV? They just say she hit her head. Maybe they'll machine-gun him and say he slipped on a banana peel.
Right, exactly. So basically, he went on CNN last night with Fareed Zakaria, the CFR, Trilateral Commission stooge, and said that all the evidence points to Mumbai being an inside job, and he's been vindicated by the fact that it's been announced that a counter-insurgency police officer who was working for the Indian authorities, he bought the mobile phone cards for the Mumbai gunman. So it's confirmed now that they had support from on the inside. So basically, he's talking to Zakaria, and the YouTube just came up about 20 minutes ago, so I gave it to the producer.
And we're going to get it, and it's going to be up on the Prison Planet story soon, right?
It's already up, yeah.
Good.
So basically, he asked him about Mumbai, and he said, yeah, it's an inside job, because the militant Hindu group were caught bombing the train, the train bombing that killed 68.
And that was a Hindu army captain in anti-terror who the head of the Indian anti-terror forces had arrested, and then he's the first guy they shoot a few weeks ago when all this starts.
Right, exactly. And he was into prosecuting the Indian authorities and the Pakistani authorities both for false flag terrorism. Now you've got Mukhtar Ahmed, this counterinsurgency police officer who was helping the terrorists get their phone cards. So in the comments now, people are saying, well, you know, at first he said it was tribal warfare, and now he's saying it's an inside job. Well, actually, the first thing we said was whoever's responsible, it'll be blamed on Pakistan. That's the first article I wrote about 2 hours after it started. That
Let's be clear. I'm going to hold you over, Paul. Let's be clear. We didn't come out and say inside job day one because we don't just make stuff up. We said we'll find out in the fullness of time. It could be tribal warfare. They're routinely killing each other over there, so the media may just be hyping this. But bottom line, it'll be blamed on Pakistan. 2 days later, exactly what you said was right. And then the evidence came out. We're investigators. Go ahead.
Well, Alex, I mean, it is tribal warfare, and it's being provocateured. Obviously, it's not a complete inside job like 9/11. There's different types of it, as you said. But you remember you phoned me up the day after it happened, and I said, yeah, it just looks like tribal warfare. It may have had help from the inside. And you said, yeah, it's probably tribal warfare, but it definitely looks provocative. So that's the first thing you said to me about it.
Look, we have open commenting on the sites, Paul. We're going to have COINTELPRO operatives in there. A lot of times they even link to their own MySpaces where they're in psych warfare in the military. They're proud of destroying America, and they've done a great job. So just ignore them. You know, we're completely cutting edge, and they hate it. We'll be right back. Stay there, Paul. Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. We're live. Coming up this Friday, I'm going to be live out of the new studio. Probably do 2-3 hours live at PrisonPlanet.tv. We're also going to shoot some video in the new office and show you what we've done with the money bomb and a lot more. And we're only a couple months out from doing pilot shows on either Dish Network or DirecTV. So we have been working very, very hard in between all the filmmaking, the radio shows, the interviews I do, building the new studio. You only live once, and we're going 110%. And it's making the enemy mad. All the glory goes to God. We ask that God give us all the tools to stand up against evil and to help the weak defeat the evil. All right, my friend, Paul Watson, continue with the amazing exchange that we're going to be playing coming up in the next segment from CNN yesterday. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Fareed Zakaria, the host, asks the former Pakistan ISI chief, General Hamid Gul, about Mumbai. Then the subject turns to 9/11. Zakaria asks him, what's your hunch? Who perpetrated the 9/11 attacks? Gul responds, quote, well, I've been on record and I said it is the Zionists or the neocons. They have done it. It was an inside job. And he lays out the reasons why. They wanted to conquer the world, basically. And then he says, Zakaria asks him about bin Laden, and then Gul responds that the evidence of bin Laden being responsible for 9/11 has not emerged, and the events are still, quote, shrouded in mystery.
Yeah, the FBI doesn't even say he did it on their website. He's not even on the most wanted for that.
All right, and then Gul makes reference to people in America, scientists and scholars, who have got misgivings about it and who have written articles about it. So he's obviously referring to people like Stephen Jones and scholars for 9/11 truth, people like that. And then he calls for Obama, not that it would probably make much difference, but he calls for Obama to set up a new commission to investigate 9/11 again. And he said that the attacks were planned inside America by people with a dangerous agenda who have, quote, turned the world upside down. This is, on primetime CNN, basically. So then they come back from the break, and Zakaria, who is, as we said, CFR, Trilateral Commission, is the editor of Newsweek, tells his viewers, quote, some of General Gull's views are simply false. There is a mountain of evidence about 9/11 that refutes his assertions. But he fails to cite what that evidence is. So then he's joined by, Zakari is joined by a counterinsurgency expert, David Kilcullen, who said that the Mumbai attacks bore all the hallmarks of a, quote, clandestine operation or a covert operation style activity. So then Zakaria tried to get him to say that it was Pakistan, and he refuses to say it was Pakistan. So he's saying it was a clandestine operation, but he says it wasn't Pakistan. So some very interesting comments were made on this show yesterday evening.
Well, the host is also a guest, been a guest of Bilderberg, so he is one of the few media people allowed into there. And again, Russian TV, Chinese TV, British, German, Italian, Japanese, they're all running mainline TV shows saying it looks like 9/11 was an inside job and covering all the declassified examples of terrorism. These TV networks are addressing it properly. They're going, okay, look, these hundreds of other cases are admitted to have been staged terror attacks, from Gulf of Tonkin to Reichstag to all these other modern examples. And they have all these presidents and former intelligence chiefs from Italy and defense ministers in Germany on to say it. And so the public is waking up, and the official lie is imploding. The truth is exploding. And meanwhile, the enemy here in the United States, the people that have captured our country, the globalists, have a flotilla of 9/11 truth bashing disinformation pieces coming out. I'm sorry, it's too late for you. Everybody knows you're terrorists now. So you've been defeated. Paul, this is a great positive thing, because now every time they have a false flag, very quickly it comes out it was staged.
That's right. And I mean, you know, in Nazi Germany, when Hitler and Goering and his agents went and burned the Reichstag down, they weren't going to have Joseph Goebbels allow the media to report the truth about it, were they? So we don't expect the same to happen in modern-day America. What's scary about this Mumbai attack is the fact that as it was unfolding, it's being revealed today, somebody posing as the Indian Foreign Secretary called Pakistan and threatened to attack them, and it almost sparked a nuclear war right there and then. So who was that?
And that's why the U.S. aircraft carriers, before it even started, were rapidly moving into the area. Indian troops were moving into the area. That's another evidence of a staged event. Anything else, Paul?
No, that's it, I think.
Great job. Coming up, I'm going to do a blitz on the news front, and I'm going to play a clip from CNN with Fareed Zakari, the Bilderberg Trilateral Commission CFR minion, attacking the former head of Pakistani intelligence, a guy who worked with the United States in the attack against the Russians, I would add, that how dare you say 9/11 is an inside job and the Mumbai Bombay attacks. How dare you? There's mountains of evidence you're wrong without giving one scintilla. Sorry. The whole world knows now, and the American people are now learning, that our country has been hijacked by crooks. You're not going to carry out your murders and your crimes, New World Order, anymore in our names. And most people in the government don't want to be part of this. We're all sick of it. The citizens, the government, foreigners. So go ahead and try to start World War III between Pakistan and India. Cat's out of the bag on this. They're arresting all these intelligence people and army folks, officers involved in the attacks, giving them the cell phones, all of it. You're busted, okay? Once people are looking for false flags, once they know what to look for, you are going to blow it staging terror attacks. Nice try calling the ministers in Pakistan within minutes of it starting and saying that India was going to attack them. Nice try trying to start World War III. Somebody in the higher-up echelons has got to get the elite to back off. I mean, I know you got underground bases and you're ready for Armageddon and all, but you're endangering your own system. Stop. Know when to stop. Don't start World War III. Don't do it. There's no reason for this, but they need it to get their world government. So we will play that clip here in just one moment. before I do that, I want to tell you about two of our fabulous sponsors. You know, there's a lot of imitators out there, but I'm telling you, if you're going to get Storable Foods, the place that I trust, the place where I've gotten my food for many years, the place that has the highest quality at the best prices is eFoodsDirect.com, the J. Michael Stevens Group. And because they are the longest continually operating Storable Foods company, you know, they want to give you quality food, non-GMO food, clean, wholesome, high-quality food, because they are the name of quality. eFoodsDirect.com, the letter eFoodsDirect.com. You'll never have to stand in a bread line if you have your own bread, folks. Call, get a free brochure, get an audio CD. Go to eFoodsDirect.com, watch the videos and materials they have for free up there about Storable Foods. Read about all the packages they have at eFoodsDirect.com. If you forget that website later tonight, you're home, you're driving in the car right now, don't have a wreck. Just remember when you go to InfoWars.com, don't have a wreck trying to write it down. When you go to InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com, at the top of both the pages is links to eFoodsDirect.com, the J. Michael Stevens Group. Wherever you're at the office or home or whatever, just got off the night shift, and you're not driving, you can write this number down, 800-409-5633, 800-409-5633. Call them, get a free brochure, but I wouldn't wait. I'd go ahead and talk to them about the different packages they have and order today. 800-409-5633, 800-409-5633, or eFoodsDirect.com. And another fabulous sponsor, EcoloBlue.com, ECOLOBlue.com, atmospheric water generator for the home, pays for itself within 1 year if you buy your water from the store. Pure, clean water without the fluoride, ultimate water from the humidity in the air. Know exactly what you're drinking. Machine produces 28 liters of water in 24 hours or 7.5 gallons. Low operating cost. On average, it costs about 12 cents a gallon. For the electricity, you can hook up the solar panel. The generated water is passed through five filters, including reverse osmosis and carbon. Simple to use, great tasting, pure H2O, exactly the way nature makes it. No chemicals, pollutants, or toxins. Neutral pH. Delivers both hot and chilled water at the touch of a button. 1 year warranty. A great alternative to expensive bottled water and water delivery services. Your own source of clean drinking water, low maintenance, and worry-free. Financing available. And then you can go to their website, EcoloBlue.com, and read about how the process works or look at all their fine line of products. I got a lot of stuff up there on the site. EcoloBlue.com. I will tell you, I got two of these machines, and they're great. But if you leave for a week, this is what I found with them, then you need to flush the water out that's in there. It's got UV light over it. But it's the best tasting water in the, I mean, it is better than anything. Reverse osmosis, distilled, and I've tried it all. It just has an incredible taste. But I will add to listeners, you've got to keep it on, or it's got like a gallon container in it. Just empty that out if you're gone for a week, because it doesn't have the magical taste if you don't use it. So just letting you know, because I use it and love it. So again, here's the toll-free number to call them, 866-585-4044. 1-866-585-4044 or EcoloBlue.com. Okay, let's go ahead and play the clip. But I'm asking you, listeners, this story is important to get out ahead of the attempt to start World War III. It's clear we need a story by Kurt Nemo or Steve Watson or Paul Watson or Aaron Dykes or somebody. We're going to get in the new office. I'm going to be able to, maybe, the economy's really falling apart, hire a few more writers and people. If you're interested in writing for us, kind of freelance or part-time, email Aaron at InfoWars.com, because we want staff writers, but the funds are an issue. But as people that really understand this stuff, and I see your writing and know that it's accurate and never speculation, well, I mean, you understand. Or if you want to submit stories that are on your website to us, email Aaron at InfoWars.com and let us know if you want us to post your stories, of course, with a link to your site. That is, of course, Aaron at InfoWars.com. You can also go to Prison Planet and email Paul Watson. But we need a story about how they did try to start World War III. And that ties into the Rand Corporation a month ago in a document saying, made big foreign news in Japan and China and Germany, not in the United States or England, that Rand wanted to start World War III. That Rand Corporation said we need a huge war. I mean, folks, they're gearing up for total martial law here. Troops on the streets, all of this, that's because they know you're not going to like what's coming. And what did Obama say on Meet the Press yesterday? He said, you're not going to like what I'm going to do. It's going to be tough, but it's for your own good, and things are going to get really rough. Folks, when politicians start talking like that, look out. Let's go ahead and play this clip. Here's part of the exchange on CNN yesterday, and then I'll analyze and comment, critique it after we play it.
Now heard a great deal about the elusive ISI, the infamous Pakistani Inter-Services Intelligence Agency. There are some reports that there may be a connection between elements in the ISI and the Mumbai terrorists. Today I've had a rare chance to get an inside glimpse, an exclusive interview with General Hamid Gul, the former head of the ISI. Do you think we should be thinking of Al-Qaeda as a terrorist group? I know that there was a conference in January 2001, which you attended, at which you felt that Bin Laden was better described as a religious warrior and should not actually be thought of as a terrorist.
No, we said unless the evidence is brought up out against him, then he is not a terrorist. It's wrong. And even 9/11's full evidence is still not emerged. It is still shrouded in mystery. And a lot of people have a lot of misgivings about that. And it's not only me. I think a lot of people in America would be thinking the same way. There are scientists, there are scholars who have written articles on it. So I think to dub a man as terrorist, because I know I heard him twice say on radio or something like that, and I think it was Osama, not only that, but Mullah Omar also said that he did not believe that Osama had carried out that act. So that is still a mystery and it needs to be resolved. Americans have still to set up a proper commission or inquiry commission into this event. I think that's very important. And I think President-designate Obama would do well to set up an inquiry commission into this.
What is your hunch as to who perpetrated the 9/11 attacks?
Well, I have been on record and I said it is the Zionists with the new cons. They have done it. It is an inside job and they wanted to go on the world conquest. They were looking upon it as an opportunity window when the Muslim world was lying prostrate. Russia was nowhere in sight. China was still not an economic giant that it has turned out to be. And they thought that this was a good time to go and fill those strategic areas which are still lying without any American presence. And of course to control the energy tap of the world. Presently it is the Middle East and in future it is going to be Central Asia. So there are many, many theories. And of course,
who do you think was at the heart of plotting 9/11?
It's very difficult, really. I wouldn't point my finger at it, but I think it was planned in America, and at least one knows that it was done in Germany as far as the reports go. But I think the heart of planning was inside America, because the job was done there, but not a single person so far has been captured, caught, interrogated inside America, even though this entire episode took place there.
But you said that that the people behind it were the Zionist neocon conspiracy. Do you mean by that American Jews? Do you mean Israel?
No, Israel. I would not, because Jews are also divided into, not all Jews are bad. Of course, there are a lot of things common between Jews and Muslims. In fact, they are the closest to us, religion-wise, because some of their scriptures are respected by us. Their prophets are our prophets. The injunctions in Torah are very much the similar to injunctions in the Holy Quran. So there are things which are very common, but there are those people who are very ambitious, who have certain agenda of their own, and I think they have turned the world upside down because of those ambitions or their fears. So fear and ambition are two things which have come together as far as Zionists are concerned, and they are trying to drive the policies of America, and unfortunately the American people are suffering because of that.
All right. So whenever it came out, it was even in the movie W. It was in the Times of London, Associated Press, in the official British intelligence chief. They leaked it. The White House admitted it was accurate. The White House got very upset and did a national security investigation and called for the British to arrest whoever leaked Not the Downing Street memo. That got more attention. The White House memo, when just a few months before the invasion in March of 2003 of Iraq, George Bush has got the intelligence chiefs from England in there and the U.S. intelligence chief, and he says, let's stage the shoot down of one of our aircraft. Paint it up like a U.N. aircraft and, you know, get it shot down, and then that'll be the pretext. A violation of the United Nations directives, United Nations rules. Now, whenever people talk about that, does CNN say, now, do you think, you know, to whoever's bringing it up, that all Christians are involved in this? Because George Bush claims he's a Methodist. Are you against all Methodists? Are you against all Christians? Are you saying Christians are bad? Or whenever it comes out, the British, and that's now been in major papers, staged a lot of the IRA bombings. And actually, we're leading and commanding IRA. And we're kneecapping people that wouldn't carry out the bombings that were below them. It turned out that the three commanders of the militarized arm of IRA were all British intelligence. It's not like there's one of them infiltrating. They're all British intelligence, provocateuring. And that's come out in the BBC and other publications. I mean, do they go, oh my gosh, are you saying all English people, all Brits are terrorists? No. So see how this mindset works? I would have thrown back at the CNN presenter, and he may have. This was heavily edited. Imagine what they cut out. Well, hey, Haaretz and Jerusalem Post and UPI report that Hamas was set up in the mid-70s to counter the Shiite Hezbollah, and that was really set up by to divide the Muslims I mean, it's always that way. The Wahhabists are more controlled, the Sunnis are more controlled by the New World Order than the Shiites, in my research and experience. I mean, that's in the Jewish newspapers in Israel, the Israeli newspapers. Are they against the Jews? See, I mean, this is childlike. And to the mainstream media, it's not working anymore. They want to make it an anti-Semitic issue. They want to make it a racial or religious issue. Instead of just going, no, the British staged terror, Israel stages terror, the Indian staged terror, Russia's been caught staging terror, the Germans got caught. Perfect example. Was it in Reuters or Der Spiegel or when it was on German and French TV? The clips are up on YouTube. It being on the nightly news that German intelligence was caught staging terror attacks in Kosovo against NATO bases, to blame it on the Serbs and Muslims to bring in more forces? Right at the time that both sides want NATO out, a decade later, 9 years later? No, they just said, I mean, are you saying all Germans are staging terror attacks? Or are you against Germans? Are you a Germanphobe? No, no one said that. And so what this does, if you're really sophisticated and nuanced and you study it, it's the media always making it about Jews themselves. Always bringing that in. You talk about the political system of Zionism, and there's actually several different variants of it, but one particular Likudnik side who has a penchant for staging terror, and they make it a taboo subject. Oh, you want to put Jews in ovens? Well, no, I don't want to put Germans that staged terror attacks a week and a half ago in ovens. I don't want to put the Indians in ovens. There are a bunch of Hindus running around saying this is an inside job in the newspapers. They know what's going on. They don't want a war with Pakistan. It's a radical group of Hindus who are in league with Israel and the United States. That is, people that control our nations. I always make it clear, it isn't the whole U.S. It isn't the whole Israel, but it's those leading it. They are the ones that killed Mahatma Gandhi. Go pull up the death of Gandhi. They killed him and then false flagged it for a week. There were riots all over the country, attacks, thousands of Muslims and Hindus killed in the clashes. As the news said, I mean, the Hindus did a false flag on Mahatma Gandhi. We should do a story about that. He was a Hindu. But he said, no, we're not going to kill the Muslims. We're not going to let the British divide us. This is a British divide and conquer Balkanization tactic. He wasn't stupid, living all over the world, in the West and South Africa and in India. He was smart. And he said, I'm not going to be part of that. And they said, you're die then. We're going to shoot you. We're going to walk up in a crowd, and we're going to blow you away, because Gandhi didn't want security. Got a lot of courage. Talk about focused and centered. And they killed him and then said the Muslims did it. Everything is false flag. Everything revolves around it. Am I against Hindus? No! You criticize Obama. Oh, you don't like black people. It's a mental game for weak-minded people. Oh, you don't want Obama to take over 83 interstate highways and make them toll roads following what Bush did. Oh, you don't like him because he's black. Oh, you don't want to turn your guns in. You don't like black people. Oh, you don't like them. Oh. Remember when people would criticize Clinton selling out to Chinese generals? CNN and Newsweek would have headlines. Are people against Asians? Is that why? No, we don't want to be sold out our missile secrets. See, they played games with you folks. We'll be right back. Peace on earth.
We believe everything that they tell us. They're gonna kill us. We better kill them first. But I remember a commandment. Thou shalt not kill.
Do you remember?
How much is that soldier's life worth?
What Christmas is really about?
To peace on earth.
You know, they're saying poor children have to have toys. Some piece of junk toy that breaks in a couple hours, couple days. Instead of, no, our children need safe milk to drink. They need safe plastics to drink out of. They don't need to have mercury-filled injections forced on them. They don't need to have their economy destroyed by the New World Order and their future destroyed and to be dumbed down in the government training camps. They need their parents, if they get caught with a marijuana cigarette, to not be thrown in prison and to have the CPS come kidnap them. They need their liberties and freedoms. They need their Bill of Rights and Constitution to be taught to them. And they need those sacred rights to be guarded and enshrined and protected. Because it isn't commercialism. It isn't products. It isn't materialism. And all of that has its place. But it's not at the top of the hierarchy of needs pyramid. Who you are, what you stand for, helping others, not being corrupt, not being able to be bought off, not going along with corruption. Because once a country gives into corruption, it races to the bottom. It takes over, and markets and society and families and communities break down overnight, and you become a North Korea, you become a Mexico, you become a Colombia. And no matter how many resources you've got, your society falls apart. And what do those societies always have? Cameras and secret police and checkpoints and militarized troops on the streets. And no due process. And the public being cattle prodded, being tasered on the street corners. That's all happening. All the good is being removed. The bedrock, what made America special, not that we've ever been perfect, but that we were special. The light of the world, where the real wealth was produced, because there was more liberty and freedom than anywhere else, and the people wouldn't stand up and go along with tyranny. They would stand up to corruption. They knew that liberty was precious, and they would guard it. They would fight for it. They would do anything to protect it. But instead, they made everything about baubles and garbage and crud. And so that's why the public's so unhappy. So they think, well, I need more baubles, more crud. I need to go into deeper debt. And it makes them unhappy. This holiday season, ladies and gentlemen, don't go blow your money at the malls. Don't go to support the truth. And if that means going to YouTube and Google and downloading my films for free and burning them on disc, do it. If you want to support us, we can operate and carry out this mission. We do need capital. Capital for something real, something valuable, something pure, go to prisonplanet.tv and get a couple memberships and create a nice little passcode, put it in a card, and give it to people. Or go to my website, go to prisonplanet.tv, download the films in high quality, burn them on disc, a lot better than YouTube and Google, and give them to people. Or buy the DVDs at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com and make copies of my films and give them to folks. Air them on Access TV. You want to give somebody a gift? Go down, sign up at Access TV. It's normally very easy. Air Terror Storm, Endgame, Truth Rising, Fabled Enemies on Local Access. Get my films, air them on Access, give that gift to hundreds of people in small towns, tens of thousands in big cities, every time you air it. And don't stop. People are waking up now. PrisonPlanet.tv is $5.95 a month. If you sign up for a year, though, you get 5.3 months free. Okay, so PrisonPlanet.tv, and please use it. Please get the material and share it.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All men 18 to 44, well, now in the U.S. Code 18 to 49, are members of the militia. And I believe all able-bodied men should own rifles, handgun, firearms, like they've always done in the Netherlands. Now they're restricting that. Switzerland, and of course, where we adopted their models, really out of the Dutch founding New York. That was one of the biggest cultural histories that the founders drew on. And of course, it was part of the culture of the colonies before that. That the men, and the women for that matter, be armed to protect their counties, their cities, their towns, their hamlets. But now we've seen a demonization of the Second Amendment culture where if you try to put a rifle in a rifle rack, even in Wyoming or Texas, cops will pull you over. Nine times out of ten, run up and a lot of times point guns at you, pull you out on the ground, put you down. Because the public sees a gun, they panic. Oh my gosh, there's a slave with a gun. The TV dramas are almost all based in Chicago and New York. All these different TV programs, fiction, they show people being busted with guns and handguns and rifles in their houses or cars. They're always a criminal. So the message is, you're a criminal. You know, they always have drugs or something with it. You have drugs. You know, you are a child molester. You are a cop killer if you own a gun. It's programming. And the message that guns are illegal to begin with. And a caller called in with an example of, you know, NFL on Sunday on Fox, and they were even having anti-gun messages in there. And I pulled it up. Sure enough, last night it was there. Demonizing, oh, these football players were always getting caught with guns. They're wealthy. So what? They've got something to protect. So what? The point is, and maybe even some of them are gang members and thuggish, don't take my rights because of them. But for those of you that don't want to go join one of the active militias, and I will tell you it's dangerous because they're infiltrated with feds. They try to provocateur you. Never be around anybody who says, we ought to carry out an attack. We ought to get violent. We ought to do this. They'll wait till you're having a beer or something after you've been training. That's a Fed, folks. They're normally the leader. They'll even found groups to do this, and I've seen a lot of folks go to prison. Don't be the best thing to do is say, hey, we're a local shooter club. We're a neighborhood defense deal. You know, we're just training for the defense of our homes. We're a gunsmith club. And we like to go out and, you know, train. It's exercise. And then anybody that comes in and calls for violence, just go to their car, say, get out of here, write down their plates, get in your car, follow them. It's a Fed. Or it's a local state police operative. And then you go and you call the media. You call the news. This is how we counterstrike them. You call the media. If the media doesn't cover it, you go on Access TV. You call them to talk radio shows. And you say, hey, this cop came, he tried to get me to do violence. And there's lots of counter stings happening all over the country. It's very, very exciting. That's one of the things that really made him go after the militias in the early 1990s. Remember in Alabama, it was a good old boy roundup with more than 5,000 FBI BATF. They were selling inward hunting licenses and hanging blacks in effigy. Remember that went on 60 Minutes? Boy, they went after the militia hardcore after that. So there's a lot we can do to them as well. So this is the model. Anybody that tells you, militia, it's secret, meet me to dig up guns, meet me, you know, do some covert ops, it's a Fed, folks, or it's a schizophrenic mentally unstable. We're the good guys. We're the patriots. We're out in the open. It's our Second Amendment. And we have to bring our guns out in public, show everybody, bring our culture back, not let them act like it's some porno movie you bought on the side of the highway at some shop that you put in a black bag and sneak out to your car with. They have made gun owners get in the closet while the globalists and their tyranny and their social engineering is out of the closet, pushing us around, telling us what to do. So we're going to talk about the history of the Founding Fathers, the history of this nation, Revolutionary War stories to relearn who we are, where we come from. Then we're going to get into the Appleseed project at appleseedinfo.org and a really good cutting-edge group that'll keep you out of the jailhouse where you can still defend the Second Amendment.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
I've got some big breaking news that just developed here in the office, but we're going to cover it after this current guest leaves us in about an hour and 20 minutes from now, so stay tuned for that. Sam Damewood, I heard him on Derry Brownfield a few weeks ago and really wanted to get him on. 26-year active duty military veteran from Erie, Pennsylvania, gunsmith, lifelong student of American history, and a crack rifleman, currently living in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And we're going to talk about constitutional history, the militias, and this Appleseed movement that's got tens of thousands of people out training to be riflemen to try to bring life back to the true heritage of a country that is a gun culture to its very core. Remember a few years ago, a head professor up in Chicago wrote a book saying that it was an anti-gun culture and 99% didn't own guns. He was kicked off. He lost his tenure. It turned out he lied. He falsified everything. Well, we already knew that. The point is, they are attacking this culture. They say you're evil, you're bad, you're a redneck, that it's a false appendage, all of this stuff if you want to own a gun. No, we want to be sovereign. We don't want to be slaves. We don't want to be like China and Russia and other countries in Mexico where they've been disarmed and made to be slaves. The Second Amendment is the key, and the dual key is the First Amendment. All of these are under attack. And so we'll also talk about appleseedinfo.org. The Appleseed Project as well, and take your phone calls coming up in about 45 minutes. But I want to talk first at length to our guest because I've probably read, 15, 20 big books on the Revolutionary War itself, quite a few books on the pre-war. I read Alexander de Tocqueville's book that came out about 10 years after the war, where he went around the colonies, now the United States, and was just amazed by the ingenuity, the intelligence, the educational level of folks living in log cabins, just the most amazing people he'd ever seen. He'd been all over Europe. And then how we've turned into what we are now, how we get back what we were, this incredible heritage, and then go forward from there. So it's really great to have Sam Damewood on with us. Sam, it is wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alex. I appreciate you inviting me on your show today.
For folks that don't know who you are, a little bit more about yourself. How you got involved in Appleseed, what it is briefly, and then we're going to get into what this country really is about.
Well, Alex, I'm really just an ordinary person here in America. I was born in the late 50s, grew up with all of the fine American values that we had in the 60s, was taught to be a decent human being by my parents, joined the military. I spent most of my adult life with them. When I retired, I came out into gunsmithing, and a couple of years ago, a friend of mine put me onto the Appleseed people. He said, this is something you really need to get into, and I looked at them, checked them out. I went and participated in an Appleseed shoot, and I said, these people have something that I really need to be part of. They've got the message. They know where America's from. They have those values that we all appreciated and that we grew up hearing about when we were children. And that's how I got involved with Appleseed, and it just took off from there.
And you're an instructor with Appleseed now.
Yes.
Break it down for folks what this country's really about and why the globalists want to remove our heritage. Let's break it down.
Well, I'm not really sure why the globalists want to remove it, but over the past 200 years, we've deviated a lot from the principles that we've read about from our founding fathers, and Appleseed just put me back on track. It just told me where I needed to go to get back with those values and those things that our country was founded on, our love for freedom. And I believe there are people in the world that just can't deal with freedom. Here in America, we're founded on freedom, and Appleseed's the best way I've seen to maintain it. So I stuck with them.
Briefly describe Appleseed, and then let's get into some of those great stories you were telling, many of which I was familiar with, but I love the way you were telling them. Let's spend some time on the spirit of the rifleman, you know, 70-plus-year-old men fighting the Redcoats. I mean, people need to hear that.
Sure. You know, in Appleseed, we introduce to our shooters a lot of the history that went with Lexington and Concord and the background behind them so that they can appreciate what it took for our founding fathers to break away from England. And in amongst the shooting instruction, we tell the story of what we call the three strikes, what started the Revolutionary War and how it got going. We offer very good shooting instruction in the process, but when people are listening to the history, it brings tears to their eyes because the older people are familiar with it and the youngsters have never heard it. It's not taught in the schools today. We teach the nation's heritage as riflemen, how the people planned to take care of themselves. They were self-reliant in those days and looked out for each other. They just wanted freedom, and they planned for it, and they carried it out. And Appleseed brings back that heritage as a nation of riflemen to America and introduces people to the history of the founding and how we got going. And I guess we really should start with back at Lexington and Concord, like we like to teach it in Appleseed. On the 18th of April of 1775, General Gage was the British commander in Boston. And the cities of Boston and New York had been occupied by the British military for almost 10 years at that point. In retaliation for actions we'd taken against the First Stamp Act in 1763. The people rebelled against it. They felt that they were being unfairly taxed for a purpose that they didn't care for. They weren't consulted in it. And Parliament had never before tried to control the colony or tax them. With the mounting debt that big government will always bring, the Parliament was in huge debt from the French in the Seven Years' War, French and Indian War, as we call it, and they wanted to recoup that, so they passed the Stamp Act and the Revenue Act to try and raise money to pay that off. The colonies objected. They objected so strongly that the British sent in over 10,000 troops to occupy the country, and when we refused to pay to quarter those troops, they sent in more. Occupied New York specifically to punish them. Along with those taxes, they started passing what were known as writs of assistance, which were general search warrants that allowed the British to search anywhere they wanted for contraband that had been smuggled in violation of those taxes. And Americans were pretty creative as smugglers in those days, as some of them still are, and the British just couldn't keep up with it in any way, shape, or form. As the British government became more and more oppressive to America, the colonists took action to protect themselves. And they formed committees of correspondence to pass information back and forth between the colonies so that everyone could keep abreast of the latest news, what oppressions and evils were being done. One of the people that we hear a lot about, Paul Revere, was primarily a messenger for the Committee of Correspondence of Massachusetts Colony. And he was widely respected and known to people all over the nation
because he carried the messages back and forth. He made a series of journeys south, carrying news from the committees of correspondence. As the oppression became more and more intolerable, the people knew that they were going to have issues. The British had taken the government of Massachusetts colony and thrown it out. They said, you no longer have the right to govern yourself. We'll appoint the courts. We'll appoint the representatives. We'll tell you everything to do. The people of Massachusetts were very brilliant. They ignored the British. When the British tried to have a court sit, people didn't come for jury duty. When the British tried to have an assembly and vote on things, get things done, people ignored what they said and did. They held their own town meetings and continued to rule themselves. And the British were highly intolerant of that. And as things came to a head in late 1774, the British started to become more and more aggressive in trying to control the colony.
Now, let's stop there. We're going to break in a moment and come back and go through this. But as you list what you're listing that was later put in the Declaration of Independence, they've now announced NORTHCOM, 20,000 troops for the streets of America, for civil insurrection, that the governors will serve at the pleasure of the president as dual-hatted military officers, same thing the British did. They've created all these new courts, family courts, federal bureaucracies, regional courts that aren't even real courts, they're tribunals. All the same forms of tyranny are now being used. The blank FISA warrants, that's not even good enough for them. Now they just don't have warrants. They're using the Patriot Act in non-terror-related cases. So we see literally a mirror image and quartering of troops. That also makes troops in the streets, troops at checkpoints, at street corners. Now we're hearing this is happening. And I had a judge advocate colonel on last week who's a Republican saying this is horrible. It's all over the news that what we're hearing is totally illegal. So we see a dovetailing here with what our founders went through and what we're going through. And the good news here is they were occupied, as you say, for more than a decade before they finally physically fought back. So, folks, this is going to be a long, hard fight, and that's separate from Appleseed and the rest of it. The point is that it was the publishers. Many of them, many of the founding fathers were publishers, and they finally tried to stop them publishing their newspapers so they'd go underground. Then they would arrest them. Then the people would rebel, seeing that tyranny. We're going to go through the same thing. A lot of us won't make it through this, but in the end, the Republic will be restored. We'll be right back with our guests. Stay with us.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Sam Damewood is our guest.
Go tell that long tongue liar.
Good to have you with us today. Do you want to comment on what I said as we went into break about similar tyranny today, or do you just want to move forward into 1775?
Yes, Alex. Obviously, in response to that government oppression, the colonists felt a need to prepare. They prepared in many ways. They developed their own information networks with the committees of correspondence, and they paid attention to what was going on with the government. They created several organizations. There were seven or eight in Boston alone. And it's remarkable that of all of those lists, of the main ones, there were only two people that were on more than three of those lists of organizations. One of them was Paul Revere, who we all know from his famous ride, which the poets have sort of misrepresented to us, but in their preparation, they had decided they needed to arm. And they had maintained stocks of arms all throughout the colony. Lexington and Concord had them. And the very first action that was taken by the British government was something called the powder alarms in our history, where the British went and attempted to remove the stocks of gunpowder from the colonists. The colonists took this as a signal that the government was taking action against them, and they stepped up their training and organization. There had always been a militia in the colony. People needed to band together to protect themselves first from the depredations of Indians and criminals and from the French during the French and Indian War. But the militia, as many people know it, is an incorrect picture. It's a body of many kinds of citizens, but not Minutemen, like we all like to think of. There were, in fact, Minutemen, and the colony of Massachusetts had agreed that they should field some companies of Minutemen, who were a quick response force. But there were two other bands that were very important in this entire process. One of them was called the Alarm Band. And the Alarm Band were the people that sounded the alarm when danger was detected. Paul Revere was one of the people that passed that information to them. And we think of Paul Revere running off alone to tell the world, but there were actually a whole group of supporters that helped him in this endeavor. We had spies in the British Army keeping track of them. And it was through one of those spies that we learned that the British were going to be coming up to Lexington and Concord to seize weapons.
And they routinely would kill, they would hang those spies. This was also very, very dangerous.
Yes, it was. What was unusual in this, and like most spies, it's hard to tell who they really are, but it appears that the spy in the enemy camp for us on April 18th was a woman named Margaret Kemble Gage, who was the wife of the British General Gage, the commander in Boston. She was a good American lady from New York and had trouble with divided loyalties. She wanted America to succeed and prosper on its own without British intervention. And as far as we know, she's the person that told us that they were coming. So the word went out through several people. It took three people to get those lanterns up in the old North Church to give the signal. And Revere, Dawes, and several others went on their way to go out and pass the word that the regulars were coming. They didn't ride up and down the road yelling, "The British are coming." And that's very important because they didn't think of the British as separate people. They thought of themselves as loyal British citizens.
Yeah, they didn't say the Redcoats are coming. They said the British were coming. And they were telling the government to treat them the same as British citizens or subjects as they had been. They weren't being treated like that.
Right. They said the regulars were coming because they all considered themselves to be British citizens. In any case, Revere and the others went about their alarm to pass the word to everyone. And Revere's initial mission was to get to Lexington and pass the word because it was thought that the British were trying to capture John Hancock and John Adams. And that wasn't actually the case. They were going for the guns in Concord, but Revere went to Lexington to pass the word to Hancock and Adams so they could get out, because it was thought that they were targeted. They were the only rebels in Massachusetts who had not been offered amnesty.
We'll be right back. Stay there. Quick break, long segment coming up. Lots of time to get into these battles. I want you to take your time breaking down what happened and how this country was founded. Stay with us. To radically and quickly expand a rifleman culture in this country. Because without that skill, we cannot have a true militia to defend our nation from enemies foreign and domestic. Sam Damewood, to know the present and the future, as you well understand, we need to understand our past. And we are doing that today. So you were continuing with Paul Revere's ride, getting stopped by the British, all the things that happened there, and then what unfolded after that. Please continue and take your time. I want to tell some of those amazing stories.
Okay, Alex. Revere went on his ride, and he was actually stopped and captured by the British on the way, by a British major by the name of Mitchell. They interrogated him, held a pistol to his head, asked him what was going on, And in a great line of misdirection, he told them that in Lexington, he was going to meet 500 men on the parade ground in the town square. And if they hang around in that position, that patrol was dead men. Major Mitchell was pretty hot-headed, and he'd already gotten upset and hurt a couple of people that day over it. He took Revere's horse and turned him loose on foot and headed back to warn the army with an exaggerated version of the perceived danger. Revere went back to Lexington at 4:30. The militia had already been called out and formed and released at least one time at that point. They were hanging around in a place called Buckman's Tavern, which still stands today. The Captain Parker, in charge of the militia in Lexington, had sent out two scouts to find out about the status of the British. And one scout returned and said there was no danger. About the time that Revere got back, another scout returned with news that the British were only 15 minutes from town. He'd found them a little bit earlier, but he got trapped in a road behind them. Captain Parker had the drummers sound assembly to bring the militia back out to the common, the town square, which is a park in the middle of town, where the militia would muster and do their training.
Let's stop right there and then continue in a moment. What type of men made up the militia? We know there were silversmiths and blacksmiths, and we know there were doctors, there were pastors, there were preachers, but predominantly, these, a lot of them were veterans of multiple conflicts, the war with the French, the different wars with different tribes.
Oh, yes. A lot of these men had had military experience during the French and Indian War and had been working along dealing with Indian attacks all along through their entire lives. And the American continent was not a quiet and peaceful place for the most part. And that's one of the reasons why they kept up their militia and did their training, because there was always a threat of some kind. There were farmers, doctors, lawyers, insurance salesmen, every occupation that you can think of. Revere was a silversmith. One of the captains of militia was a blacksmith from the town of Acton by the name of Isaac Davis. He was particularly adamant about having his people trained. Besides being a blacksmith, he was a gunsmith, which is a profession dear to my heart. And he had his people trained by firing behind his shop. And he went to considerable personal expense to make sure that his people were outfitted with what was at that time the latest available gear. They all actually had ammunition boxes and bayonets, which most of the militia did not. There were farmers, shopkeepers, doctors, clergymen. Many of the people who were in the alarm band were doctors, because doctors did a lot of traveling in those days, and they knew their way around in the dark. They could find their way from one town to another. Same way with pastors. Given the type of life that they had, a lot of their life centered around the church in those days. And the militia was a very democratic organization. They voted in their officers and NCOs, and they actually consulted before they did anything. They often would consult with their pastor, who was an integral part of the unit. There was one old pastor took part in the festivities on April 19th, 80 years old, who walked all of them into the ground. He was that adamant to be part of the organization and go out.
And meanwhile, while all this is going, way to the south in the Carolinas, you have at this time when he's 10 or 11 years old, as it's all about to start, and his mother and brother died in a British concentration camp. They actually invented him. And that, of course, was Andrew Jackson, who wouldn't clean the boots of one of the British officers. So that's the famous scar across his face. So also in this war, a lot of amazing people were developed. But now let's continue back. There's a British force coming, where they are, what happens?
Right. The British force marched on Lexington, and the lead unit was about 250 men out of a total of 800. It was led by a young lieutenant named Jesse Adair. He saw the militia gathered on the green and led his unit off the main road from Concord, taking a fork up to the green to confront the militia before the officers in the rear could stop him. Captain Parker head of the militia in Lexington, saw this and began his moving his men back. The British unit lined themselves up in a battle formation in front of them and shouted their battle cry, which was so loud that many of their own officers were deafened. Couldn't hear it very well. Captain Parker had approximately 70 men mustered on the green. Two of them were strangers from out of town that were recruited on the spot. Will you stand with us? And they did. Parker lined everybody up and told them, stand their ground, with a famous, pretty famous quote, stand your ground, don't fire unless fired upon. But if they want to have a war, let it begin here. That sounds pretty aggressive, but actually they were still in a very defensive mode. Do not fire unless fired upon. The head British Marine in that contingent, by the name of Pitcairn, rode up on his horse with four other British officers and told them, lay down your arms, you damned rebels. And Parker actually ordered his men to disperse. And they started to back off of the green in pretty good order. Now, somebody fired a shot at that point.
And a lot of evidence shows it's the British. Plus, these are battle-hardened troops from wars all over the world. They're there. They see people getting ready to back off. And so they go, okay, let's go ahead and take a shot.
Right. Well, it was in pretty good agreement from all the statements afterward that not one of the regulars, the British regulars in the formation, fired a shot to begin with. And none of the militia people fired a shot. But there was Major Pitcairn and four British officers on horseback at the head of the formation. And one of them was a Lieutenant William Sutherland, who was well known as a hothead and had been speaking rather harshly of colonists all day long. And it's thought that he's the one that actually fired the first shot from his pistol. Most of the people agreed that it sounded like the first shot came from a pistol and did not come from the British line. But after that first shot was fired, the British regulars began to fire. The militiamen were pretty much amazed. They hadn't planned on being fired on at this point. They were dispersing, retreating off the green. The regulars opened fire without orders, and the officers couldn't control them. They tried everything they could, but it didn't happen. The young guys ran away. Several of the older ones were determined to fight back. And one of them, Jonas Parker, said he would never run. And he was shot down on the spot. And while he was trying to reload his rifle, he was bayoneted. Another one that was killed was Ebenezer Monroe, who thought there was no chance to escape, so he might as well fire back. Only two of the militiamen fell dead on the line where they were mustered. That was Jonas Parker and Robert Monroe. The rest were killed while following the order to disperse. Jonathan Harrington, who was probably the father of the Pfeiffer, fell with a gaping chest wound only yards from his home and died on his own doorstep while his wife and son watched. Seven militiamen were killed and nine were wounded. A prisoner who the British had captured earlier was also killed. Reportedly, he was told he could leave. Then he was shot in the back as he ran away. Only one regular was wounded.
Now, let's be clear. The regulars have been beating people up and interrogating and torturing people on their way. That was ongoing, so they weren't a friendly lot.
Well, they weren't friendly. They didn't go out of their way to hunt people down and molest them along the way, but they had regular patrols out there to stop the alarm word from getting through. And they had been stopping citizens and threatening and interrogating them all the time during the march, all evening long, because just about everybody on the road at that time was one of the messengers. They had taken a good swipe with a sword at one fellow earlier on in the day. And the alarm list had done their job. The organization was getting the word out. There were alarm guns, which were gunshots fired in a pattern to signal people, and church bells ringing all over Middlesex. That entire area of Massachusetts was alarmed and told what was going on. And the British had been trying to control that information flow all through the night as they marched on their way. At about, with only one regular wounded, it was kind of surprising because the various militias shot pretty well. So it's pretty convincing who fired that first shot, and it was a Britishman. No way to get around that. Like I say, they think it was Lieutenant Sutherland. He was called into General Gage later to explain his actions of that day. It was never admitted that he fired the first shot, but he's the biggest suspect.
Okay, continuing with what unfolded that day and the next few days, and then what it led to, and some of the interesting characters, heroes of the fights.
Okay. Well, you have to remember, these are common people who are out, they're out just doing their day-to-day job, and suddenly they're warned by the alarm guns and bells that the regulars are coming out, obviously not to do them any good. You know, we had some amazing people in all of this. One of them like I say, is dear to my heart was Isaac Davis, who's a militia captain from Acton, who had well-trained his troops. And he marched his troops to Concord. And at Concord, he was in the van when the shooting started there at the bridge. And it's interesting to note
by the van, he was in the front.
In the front of the group. He was chosen because his troops were the most well-equipped and well-trained, and it was widely recognized.
And at this time, the British regulars are running around trying to confiscate firearms and cannons and powder and things of that nature. Please continue.
Yes. When the British got into Concord, they went out to a farm that was operated by a militia colonel, Colonel Barrett. And it was heard that all of the guns and cannon had been moved to his farm and stashed there. So the British split their forces, secured the bridges in Concord, and sent a party of men to Colonel Barrett's farm so they could seize the guns. While part of the militia stayed behind in Concord to search through the town. And they spent all morning searching through the town. And finally, Major Pitcairn had to break into the inn in Concord, threatened to shoot the innkeeper because he wouldn't open the door, got in and held him at gunpoint and told him he was going to blow his brains out if he didn't tell him where the guns were. Unfortunately, the innkeeper knew where the guns were, and he led them to three 24-pounder cannon, which the British destroyed. They busted the carriages up and tore the trunnions off. They found a bunch of musket balls that they threw in a pond. They destroyed flour, a bunch of wooden spoons and trenchers, and they cut down the town liberty pole, which was a signpost where people would meet to exchange news and post broadsides, flyers.
The Sons of Liberty meeting place.
Yes, basically it was. And they started a fire with all of that wood, and in the process, the fire got away from them and set the town alight. What's most interesting is that the troops stopped their business, the colonists stopped theirs, and they got together for the first time that day and helped each other put out the fire. When the militiamen at the North Bridge, they were a mile away from the North Bridge on a hill, saw the smoke, they were certain that the British were burning the town. And they started to march back toward town when they saw all that smoke from the fires. And they were asked, in typical militia fashion, who wants to go? All of the commanders and troops were consulted, and Captain Isaac Davis said, I have not a man that is afraid to go. And they lined up and headed toward the bridge, spread out along the hillside in a row of twos, with strict orders not to fire until the British fired first, but then fire as fast as you can. When the British saw them coming, they fell back from the bridge, and they started pulling up the planks on the bridge. One of the militia majors, Major Buttrick, was upset. That was his family land and had been since 1638. He consulted with his men, took time out to have a meeting, and they consented to attack. And two regiments marched down the hill with drums and fifes, marching in formation, militiamen marching in formation. That so shocked the British, it's untellable how much of a shock that was to them. They didn't believe that the militia would come in there in good order. Their officers had been saying all along that the people of Massachusetts were nothing but an armed rabble. Major Pitcairn had said, I only need to start to draw my sword out of the scabbard, and they'll run.
So tell folks what happened.
Well, the British were lined up for what they called a street volley. There were only 8 or 10 abreast, and one row would fire, and then the succeeding row would come up, and they would keep up a continuous fire that way. But they were bunched up with a narrow front. When the militia came down the hill, one of the British troops in a line, nobody knows who, fired, and all the rest of the British began to fire. Isaac Davis was killed in that opening volley with a ball through the heart. When the British fired, they were never taught to aim. There were no sights on a Brown Best musket, and usually they shot high. That's just kind of the way they work.
This was designed for huge armies blasting each other from just 50 yards away.
Right. They fired in formation, and really they considered the bayonet to be the primary weapon. So they would fire the gun and then fix bayonets if it weren't already and do a rush. Well, we aimed, and the British didn't. They shot high, we shot low, and we decimated the British, almost exterminated every officer in that company.
All right, stay there. I want to hear more about this and some of the listeners. The start of the war that led to this republic. And now we have the great-great-great-grandchildren of the British New World Order system bringing in their corporate slave state yet again and attempting to decimate the Second Amendment. We'll stay with it when we get back. What we need are modern committees of correspondence today. The best material to wake people up about the overall system we're living under and what we face.
All those drifters' days
are my documentary now. Films available in DVD, VHS, a lot of other great books and videos we carry by other wonderful authors and researchers and filmmakers at Infowars.com.
What to leave out.
Makes a great Christmas present. Give them a PrisonPlanet.tv membership. 5+ months free right now at PrisonPlanet.tv. You can also call toll free. Ask about the combo deals. Huge discounts on some of my films as low as $5.95 a piece for 2-hour films. That number is 888-253-3139. 888-253-3139. We got about 35 minutes with our guest. How time flies. Look to have him back on for a part two of some of the incredible things that happened during the war. You know, I can tell these stories too, but not as calmly and as Sam is doing. I mean, so much happened. I mean, what happened at Trenton after all these battles they'd lost? Dragging cannons, you know, many miles through the snow from Ticonderoga. I mean, just all the dedication. It was really amazing, and the hardship, and 3-1, 5-1, 10-1 in some of the battles. Just absolutely amazing. Sam, let's accelerate now and start getting into a little bit shorter of the version of what happened. So the British get blasted off the bridge. Most of the officers get killed. The war is on. Continue.
Right. At this point, we're what the Appleseed folks call the second strike with the initial engagement at the North Bridge. And the British regulars, with all their officers shot to pieces, turned and ran for their lives, headed back for town. And this is a really surprising thing to many people. But remember I said earlier that a bunch of the British had gone to Barrett's farm to try to find guns. As those British came back across the bridge, they saw one of their wounded men who was laying on the far side of the bridge. A bystander, after the shooting, had come up and hit him in the head with a hatchet. Nobody knows for sure who did that, but they got the impression that this guy had been scalped. And that word spread through the army and was one of the reasons why the British committed so many atrocities later in the day. But the militia, who were on either side of the bridge, let that unit pass through unharmed. They were still reluctant to initiate a fight with the king's troops. And that unit coming back through from Barrett's farm didn't fire at them, and they let them go. At this point, the militia is still in a highly defensive mode. They're not taking open action against the British. We're at noon on that day now, on the 19th of April, and Colonel Francis Smith, the head of the regulars, is marching his troops out of Concord, heading back to Boston. And as he left, he knows the hills are alive with militia who are coming from many parts. Now, those alarm riders that went out, along with Paul Revere, had alerted the militia all through Middlesex, that area of Massachusetts, and they were all heading for Concord at that time, several thousand of them. And as they lined up around Concord, Colonel Smith saw them, and he was afraid. He knew that he had serious problems going. They were starting to come up with a formidable adversary, something that they had to respect, not just 50, 60, 70, 200 militiamen, but a couple of thousand militiamen. And as they headed on back, they got to a place called Merriam's Corner, which was between Lexington and Concord, a sharp bend in the road, and it was at Merriam's Corner that the militia took their main action of the day, the third try at lighting the match of revolution. And at that point, the British fired from the back of their formation into some of the militia troops.
Stay there. We got to come back. 70-second break. Sam, Dame Wood. Sam, of course, is with and out promoting great folks at the Appleseed Project, appleseedinfo.org.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Betty Martini joining us in about 45 minutes to give us the latest on aspartame poisoning worldwide, known as NutraSweet and Equal. We continue our public service announcements warning people about melamine in the baby formula, other serious issues. That's what we do here. Information here on the home front, defending the Republic against the globalists. Sam Damewood is a military veteran, a gunsmith, and a prominent promoter and one of the instructors with the Appleseed Project, appleseed.info. Before he leaves us, we'll get into that. And specifically about the Revolutionary War, specifically about the founding of this country, the gun culture that we were founded out of, specifically for the guests coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to open the phones up at 1-800-259-9231. You can go ahead and call in, 800-259-9231. Only on this issue, though, not other issues, okay? Want to respect our guest and keep it on that. Okay, so recap where we're at, what's happening. Let's accelerate through those first days.
All right, Alex. We're at a junction in Country Road called Merriam's Corner between Lexington and Concord. Militia had been pouring into the area all day. Not a simple battle plan where people were firing from behind rocks and trees like we've been led to believe. This is a sophisticated plan put together by a self-educated, self-appointed general by the name of William Heath, a book dealer from Massachusetts who sat and read every military text that he could find. And he was the appointed military leader for the colony of Massachusetts. They began a series of ambushes against the British. And these were well thought out and planned. It was what he called a circle of fire. As the British moved down the road, new elements of militia would move down the road ahead of them and set up, and as the British passed, they'd shoot them to pieces, sometimes from behind rocks and trees, usually in good order from well back off the road. The British had to put out a lot of their troops as flankers to keep these groups from getting together, and when the small groups of British flankers went out to do that, they didn't have as much firepower and they became prime targets. So the militia kept up a running fire against the British all along. General Gage must have had some idea that these people were going to be in trouble because he sent out a force under a fellow named Lord Percy to reinforce them and supplement their numbers. I guess he knew they were going to run into trouble. Lord Percy was a typical British gentleman, a member of the peerage, thought well of himself, and the only main thing that he really had to say when he wrote back after it, I had the pleasure of keeping them from being exterminated, because the militia fire was so heavy on the British regulars when he came up, they were about to lose it completely. And they were fired upon the entire way back. And this is where those people, those common people, went out and did their stuff. Most of the old men were in what were called the alarm bands because it was thought that they were too old to fight. So you go out and you give the alarm. You collect the intel. You let us know when the regulars are coming. A lot of these guys didn't do that. So they had men like Hezekiah Wyman. It was his birthday. April 19th was his birthday. I believe he was 55 years old. And his wife said, "You're too old to fight." He got on his good white mare, took his musket, and went out and, as a one-man force, took on the British. He'd pop up ahead of them, get off, rest his musket across the horse, take a shot at him, get on the horse and ride away down the road and do it again. The grim, gray-haired messenger of mortality, mounted on death's pale horse. You don't run into people like that anymore.
All right, we're going to tell more of these stories when we get back on the other side, continuing with how this unfolded. And 75-year-old men, 80-year-old men involved in the fight, how many British got killed that day, what it led to, and then getting into the modern reawakening of the rifleman here in the United States.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Duty military veteran, lifelong student of American history and a rifleman, involved training thousands of people through the Appleseed Project, appleseedinfo.org, all over the nation to go out and learn rifletry, learn how to hit a target 500 yards away, a man-sized target. And that is really the core of what let us win the war against the greatest empire on the planet that no one had defeated, not even organized governments and other empires. A few years later, they even beat Napoleon repeatedly. This is a very important story, and we are in the second American Revolution. Either the globalists, the multinationals, who've now stolen $8.4 trillion as of last week in the banker takeover bill, are going to be able to slowly but surely enslave us, or we're going to, in the information war, as the founders tried for close to 20 years to fix things through the courts and through the ballot box. But make no mistake, the enemy is going to push it into physical conflict, and it's very important for the American people to understand our heritage and understand our history so that they can know what needs to be done in the future. And so that's what we're doing here on this radio show, is educating you with a committee of correspondents about the crimes, about the abuses that are taking place in this country and worldwide today. Sam, I want to take calls coming up in the next two segments at 800-259-9231, specifically on history and the riflemen and the attack on the Second Amendment culture. But before we do that, let's continue with what happened that day and tell us about some of the other characters involved and then what this led to.
Okay, Alex. Well, Hezekiah Wyman, the guy who was too old, is one of the characters in what we call the dangerous old men. And the entire game that day was full of dangerous old men. One of them was Samuel Whittemore that you mentioned earlier. The man was 79 years old, veteran of the French and Indian Wars, armed himself with a musket, a saber, and two pistols, and opened fire on the British when they came by. They sent a detachment to clear him out. He had killed at least three British before they got up to him. He was shot in the side of his head and had half of his face blown away, and he was bayoneted. They found him later that day with 14 wounds in his body from bayonets and gunfire. He lived to be 96 years old. And if you look at the phone books in Middlesex, I think he tried to repopulate the entire state of Massachusetts on his own. There are a lot of Whittemores up there. The British commander sent an ammunition wagon back to resupply them because they only carried 36 rounds in their cartridge boxes, and the cannon that Lord Percy had with him only had 12 rounds with him, what they carried in the side boxes. The ammunition wagon was guarded by a crew of grenadiers the biggest, meanest, ugliest-looking assault troops in the British Army.
That's the Marines.
The Marines. They were assaulted by the old men of Woburn, led by a fellow named Daniel Lamson. The only record of him is known that he was a mulatto. And he led his group of elderly neighbors to capture that supply wagon, disabled the horses, shot the officers, and ran off the troops, and they got the ammunition wagon, so there was no resupply. Those grenadiers ran off in fear, scared for their lives, threw their guns into a pond, and went looking for a place to hide. They came across an old woman named Mother Bathrick. This woman is so poor, she's out digging dandelions in a field to get some greens to eat. They surrendered to her, and she took them and turned them over to the militia. This was a very bad PR coup for the British, because their critics in Parliament popped up and said, if one old Yankee woman can take six grenadiers, how many soldiers will it take to conquer America? We scared the British badly that day. We decimated them. They lost twice as many people as we did, and we kept up a running fire on them all the way back to Charlestown, which is a suburb of Boston. They holed up on the other side, and after that began the Siege of Boston, which is where the war proper got going. But I think it's very important in this entire story to remember that the militia fought a purely defensive action. They didn't take aggressive acts. We had old man Jason Russell, who was too crippled to walk, said an Englishman's home is his castle, sent the wife and kids away and stayed home, and when the regulars came up, he fought them. They killed him dead, him and 11 others there at the house. Whether it was good judgment to fort up in the house and let them surround him and take him, I won't go into that. But the man was out there, too crippled to walk, and he's gonna defend his home from the British Army. And this is the kind of character that these people had.
And now look at us today. The police in Illinois just do home inspections without warrants. I mean, all of this humiliation, the entire Magna Carta completely erased. We don't even have the Magna Carta. Forget the Bill of Rights in this country.
That is an issue, and it's something that the people are going to have to sit down and decide for themselves where all of this goes.
Well, as for me, I am going to try to rally as many people as I can to this threat, and I'm not going to any FEMA camp. I'm not turning my guns in, and that's just the end of it. And I am defensive, though, and not just historically or from a Christian perspective, from a propaganda perspective, the fact that they are going to squeeze, they are going to gun confiscate. It's already happening all over the place. The harassment, the fact is more and more people will defensively fight. The regulars are going to have to stand down. And if the people will just stand up and not be slaves, they're not going to be able to get away with this. You know, Obama's saying, don't worry. He's in the newspaper today. He's in the Sun Times. Obama, don't stock up on guns. He says, well, I'm going to reasonably restrict your guns. That means ban many types, and it goes through his votes to ban it, 308, 223, assault weapons, how he's going to create larger gun confiscation crews. I mean, it's all right here, and I've got news for the government. I'm glad that the American people are buying the gun stores clean and the ammo clean off the shelves at many times previous records. This is the all-time record, Sam.
It is. It is. I'm a gunsmith by trade at this point in my life, and I'll tell you that I've been cleaned out. My shop is empty. The one thing that people need to remember is that just owning all of these weapons is not going to help them. They need to know what they're doing, and they need to become disciplined riflemen. And this is where Appleseed comes in. They need to come out and learn how to use those weapons. And we don't make any hay about how they should use them, when, where, or why.
That's what I love. You are politically neutral, and some say you've got to throw in and say it's a military group, and let's go off and have a war. No. You are a training arm to teach our heritage, teach our history, and to be mainline, to get people trained in the skill of being a rifleman, hitting a target, a man-sized target at 500 yards, which basically anybody can do. If you just go out and take the training, tell us all about it.
Okay, Alex. The Appleseed program conducts shoots all over the nation. Two-day training clinics. We'll take a group of people and teach them to use rifles effectively. We teach them to the old standard that we used to use for the United States Army. It's readily achievable by anyone with even moderate fitness and health.
Yeah, there's no magic to this. It just takes a lot of practice. It's very exciting. Meet great people. Tell folks all about it.
Oh, they're fantastic people because they come out and they want to learn. They come with an open mind, and we teach them through six steps how to fire a rifle accurately and effectively. We generally do the training at 25 yards so that people can practice with a 22 if they want. And all these skills will pass on to larger rifles at longer ranges later on. But through this two-day course, we go through, we make an initial assessment of their ability shooting on a target, which they save. And at the end of that 2 days, they fire the same target in course of fire. And they can compare those two targets and see what the difference is and how much skill they've gained. Most people that come think they're pretty good shots already. There's a lot of testosterone floating around out in America, and of course, every American's a good shot. Well, they are from a bench with a scope-sighted hunting rifle, but that doesn't do anybody much good. That's not an effective application of the rifle. So we teach people to take a common, ordinary rifle and common, ordinary ammunition and be able to effectively control 500 yards in front of them. The rifleman's quarter mile, they call it. It's a bit more than a quarter mile, but that's what it does, 500 yards. A rifleman can hit any target he can see inside that distance, and that's a reasonable goal for anyone with a rifle. Now, we feel that if we have enough people in America who know how to use a rifle, use it effectively, that we will win the war without ever having to touch a rifle. I'm going to refer to an article that was written by a gentleman named Jeff Knox in the Shotgun News last week. He referred to the militia as mutual assured destruction. If we ever have to get into an engagement, it will be mutual assured destruction. And that is not the goal. Our goal is to be strong enough that the government and anybody else in the world will realize that you are not going to play with the American people, period. And if we have enough people who are trained effectively enough, no one will ever fire a shot, and that is our goal.
And that's why they're trying to demonize the culture, brainwash the children, and go after that way. We must explode as emissaries, happily, with the Second Amendment, getting everybody involved in its history, and then getting them involved in how to use a handgun, a rifle, a shotgun. But the key, as you said, is the rifle and the rifleman. That is mad. That is mutually assured destruction, and the enemy won't be able to move on us. But Sam, I think in a way you're wrong, though. They are going to move, even if it is mad. They are mad. And they are moving with the National Guard in Illinois doing door-to-door gun confiscations under controlled areas. Even if you're a great former military shot or a marksman, you should go join Appleseed. Go through the course. They'll recognize that. You can become an instructor. Start your own chapters in your area. Or you can go get involved in a competitive shooting club, rifle club, handgun, shotgun, riot guns. I used to be a really good shot. I mean, I could, just standing up, shoot about a 4-inch pattern at 500 yards, routinely shoot deer at 600 yards. But can't do that anymore because I don't have time to go shooting but 4 or 5 times a year. I'm just horrible. You lose the skill very quickly. And, yeah, I've been out with so many people that claim they're these great shots. They can't hit the side of a barn. We need good people to get involved in something mainline, something that everybody can be part of, something that is very patriotic to then massively grow our numbers. And the gun culture has been on the front lines defeating the establishment, but they're covertly coming in against it. But people are really waking up now to this most precious of rights, the right to self-defense. So check out the fine website and organization, appleseedinfo.org. I want to go to some of your phone calls at 800-259-9231, specifically on the Second Amendment, specifically on gun confiscation, on the Revolutionary War. It's a wide area to discuss. We'll take your calls this segment and next. And we'll talk more about Appleseed before our guest leaves us. Ship in Missouri, you are on the air with our guest, Sam Damewood. Go ahead.
Hello, Chip. Are you there?
Okay, I was told Ship was there.
Okay.
Is he gone? He dropped off. Well, you know, we're going to take calls the next segment because we only have time to get to those then. This is a short segment. Specifically, let's just do this now. Appleseed, how many states is it in? How do people get involved?
Okay. The best way to get involved is to go to appleseedinfo.org. Last year we held events in, I believe, 39 states. We want to be in every state this year. If you have people and have access to a range, we will come put on an Appleseed clinic in your town. That's how we operate. We do charge for it. We charge just enough to cover the cost of transporting instructor staff and equipment to your location. If you have a range, we can put on one. If you have a piece of farmland with a hill behind it, we can put on an Appleseed at your place. We will come to you if you can't come to us. If you go to Appleseed Info, you'll find out how to sign up for one of our shoots and how to contact us to put one on in your area. We will do that. We'll go any place where it's legal to fire a firearm with any group of people who are legal to own them, and we will teach you to use them.
How many have you put on? How many states? How many events? How many people?
Well, we've been going for 3 years now. The goal is to double every year. This year so far, we've hit about 4,000 people. And I believe we had 180 events this year.
And that's exponential. That's exponential. Because it's mainline shooting, but it also teaches you about the Founding Fathers, Bill of Rights, Constitution, our history, why the rifleman's so important. And if you're exponentially growing in 3 years, 4,000 people, it could be 8,000, then 16,000, then 30-plus thousand. This is so exciting.
It is, Alex. And we our goal is to double every year. But I'll be a lot happier if we treble every year.
Yeah, we may not have that long. And, again, I like the training. I like what you guys are doing. I think you're going to get an ultra-massive response today of people that want to be involved or have you come to their area. So, again, folks can go, if they're online, to Appleseed, just one word, appleseedinfo.org. Well, what about phone numbers to contact folks?
I'll tell you, Alex, we're an all-volunteer organization. We don't have anybody that can sit there and answer the phone all day because our people all have jobs. We're all regular, ordinary folks, so we do it over the web because we don't have any paid employees.
No, I understand. So people need to get involved, and maybe folks want to volunteer out there. They can go to the website, appleseedinfo.org. But 4,000 people trained this year. That's beautiful.
And we're not done with the year. I have a shoot here in Alamogordo on the 27th and 28th. We've already got over 150 events scheduled for 2009. We want well over 200. And we're trying to have a shoot in all 50 states on April 19th.
Well, that's great. We've got a shoot for that. Got about 3-4 months to get that done. What if folks want to go to the Alamogordo event? I guess they just go to appleseedinfo.org?
If they go to Appleseed Info, they can sign up for the event. Right there. It says register for an event. You can go right on there. We're a little bit different here. We like to have everybody out. Women and children shoot for free. Anyone under 21, any female shoots for free. Any elected official shoots for free. Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening. It's just beautiful. Absolutely. We're about to go to break. Appleseedinfo.org. Stay with us. Your call straight ahead at 800-259-9231. What do you think of this? We'll be right back.
I wish a buck was still silver. It was back when the country was strong. Back before Elvis and before the Vietnam War came along. Before the Beatles and yesterday. man could still work, still would. It's the best of the free life behind us now. And are the good times really over for good?
We're back live with our guest, one of the main coordinators and instructors.
Now we're rolling downhill.
The Appleseed
like
Project.
Ball headed for hell.
The RWVA, Revolutionary War Veterans Association, what it's all about. Find out more.
The flag or the Liberty Bell.
I want to go to some calls now. Joe in Maine, Dave in Virginia, and others. Joe in Maine, you're on the air with our guest. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Alex?
Good,
thank
sir.
You for taking my call. I hope I'm coming over okay.
Yeah.
I had spoke with a couple of people. I was at a bar the other night, and I was speaking with a couple of people about the Second Amendment. And basically what I tried to say to them, you know, is that there really is no gray area in the Second Amendment. It's the right for the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And they just, they didn't get it. And all they could say was, well, you can't carry concealed. I said, why can't you? Where's the gray area that says you can't?
Well, those are domesticated people, and you just have to move on from them and wake up those that can be woken up. But the main thing is there's 160 million gun owners in the United States, probably more. And we need to get them mobilized to just wake up one person, and we've got the whole country awake, only 300 million. But I mean, even if they... You know, even if 5 million of the 160 million gun owners go out and wake somebody up, we can take it back. We can get politically active. We need the good people that aren't idiots to get involved and to get properly trained and to stay in the gun culture and to grow it. And we need to go out, just like, you know, Christians go out and take people over to the side of Jesus and get them saved. We got to get people born again into the Second Amendment and liberty and freedom and what this country's all about. Sam Damewood, you want to comment on that?
You hit it exactly right, Alex. We have to get the people behind it. We have to get the word out. We have to teach people. We have to become a nation of riflemen again.
And look at Sam. In 3 years with his group, they have reached out and woken up with a handful of volunteers, 4,000 people trained, discovering what this country is, being able to hit a man-sized target at 500 yards. What if all of you did similar things or used organizations like this to help expand things? The solution is in the mirror. So those domesticated people in that bar, maybe give them a book, materials. I've got videos from Jews Preservation of Firearms Ownership about the history of gun control. Get that and give it to them. But every person you unlock, every person you literally take from being a gelded, neutered slave to being a free human, and freedom is a mental place. It's a spiritual place. And it's, I mean, look, the guns are all sold out. People are waking up. Just in your area of Maine, you've got some comfortable, domesticated people. I know Maine, actually people in Maine are very, on average, individualistic and hardworking from what I've seen and what I know. But I guess that particular pocket are some gelded slaves. So just move on.
Thank you, Alex. Yes, I totally agree with what you're saying. And even though there are a bunch of people up here in Maine that are not so deluded, I guess is the way to say it.
Yeah.
It just, I would really like... Because it's uncomfortable, especially not knowing who to talk to and who not to talk to, who to confide in.
Well, try this. You know, don't be uncomfortable about it. Say, man, you know why we got a Second Amendment? It's to be a free country. You know, cities that have no gun control have the lowest crime rates. Those that do have gun control have higher crime rates. You know, really talk to them. Listen, I appreciate your call. Let's talk to David in Virginia. You're on the air with our guest. Go ahead, David.
How you doing, Alex?
Good.
All right. My question is, I had actually downloaded the form for my state to get a registered handgun, and I heard rumors in the past that if you were arrested for a misdemeanor or maybe a DUI or something, that they can actually prevent you from getting a gun. Is that true?
Well, they can't. You have to force them to not violate the First Amendment. It's only felonies. You have to go to a judge. Usually cost a few $100. And they're expanding the NICS. They're expanding all this to restrict. They're adding veterans onto the list for no reason. They're putting psychological files on it. They're claiming a name is spelled wrong on your Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security, so you can't. We have to say no to the bureaucracy when they do this.
All right. And one more thing I would just like to say to all the listeners, you know, don't just take in information. Make sure you go out and do the research and back up, like, what people like you, Alex, are saying, because that will help them, you know that it is true.
I hear you, David. David, I hear you've got your radio on the background. I appreciate your call. Folks, try to turn those off. Look, last time I checked, you don't need a license. See, Hollywood and movies show cops arresting people for an unlicensed gun. That's only a few cities. Okay, so they, and everybody thinks you need a license. They think you need a license to own guns in Texas. I've had a carpet cleaner almost call the cops on me for a shotgun on the wall a decade ago. You've heard the story. They're dumb. We have to get out and expose to them that they're trying to make guns illegal by fiat just to create the illusion that that's the case. We have to reverse that, and we have to go out and educate people. Sam?
That's true, Alex. And Appleseed is the answer. We will educate the people. We make riflemen,
well,
armed Americans who are trained in the tradition of American liberty.
Well, Sam, you've got my number. And I want to try to help you coming on the show. I have millions of listeners. They're also not just millions. They're the most active listeners out there, period. Everybody says that who's been on, who's been guest. People go on, you know, Meet the Press, or they go on Rush Limbaugh, and they get less response than they get here. Those audiences are much bigger, but they're not active. We're going to make sure you get, on April 19th next year, in all 50 states, a event. We've got to make sure that happens. We've got to grow. You know, 4,000 in 1 year, starting 3 years ago. Let's reach 50,000 next year. Rick and Reno, you're on the air.
I have a comment and then a question. My comment is that at a recently at a gun range, some fellow let his kid shoot a Mac 10, and the kid shot his face off. Do you vet the people who come to your ranges to sort out the incompetent from the competent?
That's a very good question. We have very highly trained instructors, and to be quite truthful, we never would have had anyone like that out on our range firing a weapon like that. Number one, we only do rifles. But from what I understand, the person who was actually supervising that youngster was 15 or 16 years old and of no experience.
Look, let me say something. There's going to be... You got 300,000 people a year dying in car accidents. You got a few thousand with guns. The point is, you're going to have idiots. You're going to have morons, not at these Apple Seeds events. And if you see somebody handling a gun wrong at a gun range, you know, go call over the owner. Go call over the manager. There are a lot of idiots out there just now getting into the Second Amendment. They weren't brought up 4 years old in their granddaddy's lap with a .410 shotgun like everybody else was trained in this country in the gun culture and then taught safety, you know, neurotically having it all drummed into us. And I see these people who aren't trained. I see police who aren't properly trained. That's why it's a shame that we had a true Second Amendment gun culture where everybody was basically taught when they were tiny, knee-high to a grasshopper. And so there were never accidents like we have now. People brought their handguns and rifles to school to go shooting after school, even in big cities. They have almost destroyed our gun culture. We're going to get it back. Right, Sam?
That's right. And if you come to Appleseed, you can help us do it. We can save America by making educated Americans.
Does that answer your question?
My question is this, if I may. First of all, Alex, it's an honor to talk with you, and thank you. And Mr. Damewood, is it your plan or aim to invite Mr. Obama and his family to your shooting range? I think it's a good idea.
We would love to. Matter of fact, I will go ahead and personally send an invitation myself this afternoon.
I urge Alex and your audience to do the same, because I'm going to do the same.
All right, thank you. Let's talk to, is the next one Blake in Texas, and we're going to go on to Betty Martini. Last caller, Blake in Texas. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi there, Alex. Blake on Longview. Actually, I wanted to ask Mr. Danwood there, what specific type of training do you get from coming to the Appleseed? I know you talked about the rifle firearm. I'm an avid shooter myself, with pistol and with rifle. And what all do you do if you come up to an Appleseed event? What all do you go through again exactly?
Okay. To begin with, we'll evaluate your ability by having you fire on a target. And then we'll teach you the 6 steps to firing an accurate shot. Over the course of 2 days, you're going to fire more than 500 rounds of practice with intense, close coaching and instruction the entire time. And we will probably double your ability to hit. If you put a patient effort into it after an Appleseed, you'll easily be able to hit targets out to 300 yards. And if you're really good at it and you practice a little bit afterwards, will have you where you can hit a target effectively, reliably to 500 yards on demand.
Yeah, with basic frontier training that I know all basic rural Texans got, and I was kind of the last generation of that. I need to get my children involved. My son's been out shooting with his son, just getting the basic training, and he's six. By the time I was 10, I could hit bullseye, sitting at a target range at about 300 yards, dead on. By the time I was about 14, when I got to be the best shot, I could hold up a 243 and shoot the top off of a Tabasco bottle at 200 yards. Now that was probably with a three-power scope. Now, I'd be lucky if I could hit the Tabasco bottle. But the point is, if I could shoot the top off every time, you blow the top off. And obviously, you're probably a great shooter. The reason I'm saying my listeners need to get involved in Appleseed, go take the basic course, show them you're a great shot, know all the safety skills, then become an instructor. What we need is the cadres for force multiplication now on this front, on the micro FM and AM front. We're about to roll out a plan with that to aggressively get the word out. We have the info war and then the physical preparation for defense of the Republic. Anything else, Blake?
Actually, one more final comment or question for you, Mr. Alex. I'm actually very young. I'm only 24 years old here in Lummi, Texas. I'm not a very high position, but I've been listening to you for a while now, and I tell you what, you're a very strong voice to me and a lot of my close friends here. We've actually started a small group here together of basically like-minded people that get together, and we've been talking about current political issues, trying to keep all of us informed, because there's just too much info out there for me, myself, to learn, and everybody. So we've got a little group together to do that. I wanted to ask you, what would be some good advice that you might be able to pass down that somebody like myself, my position, not have a lot of money or life experience, whatnot, that I would be able to do to get more people involved and more people together and understanding?
Put ads on Craigslist that you're forming Sons of Liberty as a study group, to politically come up with a plan to try to make sure liberty is safe and freedom is there in your town or your city. And then if you build it, they will come. Just get involved. It isn't about money. It isn't about having, a silver tongue. It's about having guts and guts being enough and getting involved and putting one foot in front of the other. It's initiating the zenith. It's initiating the genesis. It's initiating, just like I did 13 years ago when I said, I'm going to get out and try to warn the people. I don't like what's happening, and I went and got an Access TV show. I appreciate your call. Sam Damewood, I really want to thank you for coming on the show. I can think of listeners teaming up with you guys to come out to a few of the shoots to make some promo videos for you guys to recruit more people. There's so many things, but it's all about personnel and people taking action. Less talk, more action, as Elvis would say, and you guys are taking action. This is just part of the ongoing solutions we try to offer as part of the show every single day. So, again, I commend you for what you've done. I commend you for your work, Mr. Damewood, and we will talk to you very, very soon again. Please give us status reports about what's happening at appleseedinfo.org.
Thank you very much, Alex. I appreciate you having us on today, and remind everybody, go to appleseedinfo.org.
We appreciate
it. Learn to be a rifle.
Okay, we are now live at PrisonPlanet.tv here in the last hour and 12 minutes or so of the show. She's with us for the next 45 or so. Got her on a bit late because I wanted to finish up with the history of the rifleman in this country and trying to re-educate the public that they've been brainwashed against the Second Amendment. So that's what we're doing here. Betty Martini hadn't been on the show in years, but I've interviewed her many times. And another example, another solution of someone single-mindedly taking action. In the last few decades, she has woken up millions of people, been on international TV, radio, thousands of times, and international TV, scores of times, with her website about aspartame, the doctors, the scientists, the research she's brought together, handing out hundreds of thousands of pamphlets about aspartame, known as NutraSweet or Equal, just how deadly it is, all the scientific evidence, the brain tumors, the excitotoxin, the endocrine disruptor, to where a lot of governments have banned it. A lot of countries now put warning labels. The U.S. doesn't yet, but now they're putting it in thousands and thousands of products and not even listing it as aspartame. You can't buy at any major store bubble gum or chewing gum that doesn't have it, even when it's not artificial. Even when it says regular sugar, not sugar-free, they're adding aspartame. How is that happening? Why is that happening? Betty, it's great to have you back on with us.
It certainly has been a long time, Alex, but I'm so glad to talk to you again. And I remember how we started out many, many years ago, and there really is a lot going on about aspartame today in the world.
Okay, we're going to break in a moment. I'm going to give you the floor for the 40, 50 minutes we've got with you today, and we're going to have you back up with Dr. Blaylock soon, because I'm going to haven't really covered this in years. I'm going to get back into it with all the melamine news and the plastic toxins news and the lead in the toys news. That is all dwarfed by the aspartame. And so just recap how you got involved in this. We're going to come back. What is aspartame? A brief snapshot of its history and where we currently are. Betty, so go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself for folks that don't know you.
Okay. First of all, I'm the founder of Mission Possible International, which is a global volunteer force. I work with world experts. We have operations today in 30 down nations, everybody working free to warn the world about aspartame. That started out many years ago. I think I've been doing this now close to 17 years. Never thought it would take this long. When someone almost died from aspartame after being diagnosed with Parkinson's, when I met Dr. H.J. Roberts, who explained aspartame not only can precipitate Parkinson's, but interacts with L-DOPA, and he was probably drinking a Diet Coke with his L-DOPA, which is exactly what he was doing. And after reading his first book and finding out about the MS issue and seizures, I would get people off of aspartame and their seizures would stop. The MS people would walk out of wheelchairs. And today there's even been a movie made about it.
All right, Betty, stay there. Got you on late. We apologize for that. You'll have plenty of time to break this down. A wonderful hero in the fight for health, Betty Martini. Stay with us.
About a lucky man who made the grade, and though the news was wrong,
gold is up by $19.90 today, 774, 20 cents. All right, going back to Betty Martini, founder of Worldwide Volunteer Force, 30 plus countries, gotten nations to ban it, take it out of the food and drinks, not here though. Okay, Betty, you got the floor. Roll through the basics of what it is, the studies, the fight, where it currently is being used and put into thousands of foods today.
Okay, first of all, as I was saying, there's now a movie about it called Sweet Misery, A Poison World. And I can remember when Corey Brackett called me. She was in a wheelchair. She had gained a great deal of weight. She couldn't walk. She could barely talk. She was diagnosed with one of the largest lesions ever diagnosed in an aspartame victim, and she said she had walked out of her wheelchair. She was fine. She said, a movie needs to be made about it. I said, tell me about it. She said, honey, I own the film company. And she went ahead to make Sweet Misery, that you can get at soundandfury.tv. And in it, it tells how this deadly, addictive, excitoneurotoxic, carcinogenic drug that interacts with virtually all drugs and vaccines got on the market. And what happened was, Searle was the original manufacturer, and they couldn't take a poison and make it safe, so they got caught. And the FDA asked U.S. prosecutor Sam Skinner to indict them for fraud, and instead he went to work for Siddeley and Austin, which is their defense team. So they asked Prosecutor William Conlin to indict him, and he, too, went to work for him. So the FDA still would not approve it and revoked the petition in 1980. And you'll find the actual 50-page report on www.mpwhi.com. Now, the interesting thing here, it almost sounds like a story out of the Twilight Zone, is that Searle had hired Don Rumsfeld as CEO of Searle to clean up this mess. And Don Rumsfeld said he would call on his markers and get aspartame on the market no matter. So the day after they revoked the petition, which would have been signed into law in 30 days, Searle sued the FDA to keep it from being signed. Rumsfeld was on President Reagan's transition team, and he owed Rumsfeld a favor because he had promised to nominate him for vice president and instead nominated Bush. So here's what he did. he had the transition team, someone from them, to call the FDA commissioner, Jerry Goyen, at 3 in the morning and fire him because he was going to sign it into law. And we have the letter from his wife on the website. Then he appointed Dr. Arthur Hull Hayes to do the deadly deed, but he knew that it would take 30 days to get him to the FDA, and that would be too late. So he wrote an executive order making the FDA powerless to do anything about aspartame until he got there. When he got there, he overruled the Board of Inquiry, got aspartame on the market, and then went to work for the PR agency of the manufacturer for $1,000 a day on a 10-year contract. So he sold his soul for $365 million. And now today, aspartame disease has become a global plague, and a medical text by Dr. Roberts has been written that's over 1,000 pages of the horrors, neurodegenerative diseases and cancers that it causes.
Betty, we've got a break. When we come back, there's thousands of studies, as you know, get into what they did with the monkeys, covering it up, that it killed the monkeys in the test, Rumsfeld covering it up, how many foods and drinks it's actually in, and how we stop it. Back in 70 seconds. Stay with us. All right, we're back live, moving quick with Betty Martini. She'll give you her website and some of the other good sites to go to. It's all documented. Government documents, government studies, letters, reports, everything she says is documented in triplicate. She's an amazing researcher. When she started out 17 years ago fighting this, nobody was talking about it. And she really single-handedly ignited the fire that's now gotten it banned, restricted in nations, and saved undoubtedly tens of millions of people. It's got to feel good. And it's another example of what good people can do when they take action against evil. Who are the other Betty Martinis out there on other issues? The Second Amendment, open borders, GMO crops, fighting the New World Order. Where are the other Alex Joneses out there? Look at all I've been able to do, thanks to you spreading the word. All right, Betty Martini. These are some short segments here at the end of the hour. Long segment coming up. We're going to break in about 5 minutes. Please continue rolling with what aspartame is. You gave us some of the history of how it got in, and then now that it's lost its patent, it's been put in tens of thousands of things that we know of.
Okay, and I'm glad you brought up the monkey study. First of all, aspartame is 40% aspartic acid, and which is an excitotoxin and stimulates neurons of the brain to death, causing brain damage. And Dr. Russell Blaylock wrote the book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. Then it has a methyl ester, which immediately becomes free methyl alcohol, which is a severe metabolic poison, converts to formaldehyde, causes metabolic acidosis. There's 50% phenylalanine, which is an isolate, is a neurotoxin, floods the brain, lowers the seizure threshold, depletes serotonin, and causes psychiatric and behavioral problems, and then interacts with all antidepressants. The whole molecule breaks down to diketokiperazine, which is a brain tumor agent, which triggered brain tumors in original studies. So everything about the molecule is poison, and it's genetically engineered, all of it. Now, the monkey study that you're referring to, there's a little more on this now, was actually pivotal in the approval of aspartame. It was a 52-week oral toxicity study done on 7 infant monkeys fed aspartame. 5 had grand mal seizures, 1 died, and they actually used that in the approval of aspartame. Now, something about that is, as it explains in Dr. Roberts' medical text, is that it interacts with all anti-seizure medication, sometimes even after the patient is off of aspartame. But what is going on now is that they are beginning to put aspartame in the very products used to treat the problems that it causes. For instance, an informant from Pfizer called and said they had reformulated Dilantin and had put aspartame in it. And indeed, people are complaining of more seizures and many reactions that aspartame causes such as male sexual dysfunction and all the vision changes.
I mean, it's an accelerant, but we're about to break. Let's go back, and then we'll come back and get into the monkey study and what you're covering now. And it's not just Betty Martini saying this. All the medical doctors and brain surgeons and toxicologists you've got on your team, and it's all documented on your website, and we'll give that out. But going back, yeah, tell them how they make aspartame when you mentioned that it's biologically engineered. Explain that to them.
Well, it's interesting that that Dr. Bill Deagle worked across from the aspartame factory, and he has seen all these vats of this black toxic sludge, and he said that he was they were told at the hospital not to mention the things that it was causing. And that they actually insert genes into it. It's cultured on E. coli. And he said then it's pressed into a white powder. And it is, shipped out and then made into the actual NutraSweet product. And we have the material safety data sheet on WNHO.net. And it's you actually have to wear protective clothing even to go into the plant.
Stop right there. I'm going to skip this break. We're going to keep talking right now and then come back to everybody else in just 3 minutes with Betty Martini. Here we go.
A day unlike any other.
Betty, we're still on the web right now, so we're going to keep talking. Specifically, though, I mean, how do they originally manufacture it? I mean, I know that's all very guarded. What is it made up of? Because I've had Blaylock and other medical doctors on about it, but specifically from all your research, how are they making this stuff?
Well, they're culturing it on E. coli bacteria. There's a methyl ester, that becomes free methyl alcohol. And the problem is, for instance, they give you this propaganda, well, there's more methanol in oranges. But the problem is that in oranges, you also have ethanol, which is the antidote for methanol toxicity.
Yeah, it's balanced. It's neutral.
Right. And as Dr. Walton pointed out in an article in Discovery, this is also bound to pectin, but when methanol is free, then and not bound, it's so poisonous. For instance, now the Croco study has been done, and I flew to Barcelona to talk to Dr. Alemany, and it showed that it actually embalms living tissue and damages DNA. And in the medical text, it's actually a page on pre-embalming, and he told me personally, he says, Betty, this is going to kill 200 million people. And I says, Dr. Alemany, it already has. First of all, it's an abortifacient. It causes all the fatal neurodegenerative diseases. The Ramazzini study has now showed that it's a multi-potential carcinogen. He did a second study showing that if a pregnant woman uses it and she is the baby survives because it's a teratogen and an abortifacient, if the child will grow up and get cancer. And I said it is causing so many of these problems that people are just literally...
Yeah, we have all these babies getting cancer now. The cancer
well,
rate in children.
A lot of them are being born with brain tumors. And the new statistics is 1 in 10 worldwide now is autistic. And that is absolutely outrageous. And so... It's the formula of death.
And they're proliferating. And last time I checked, it was over 10,000 products. What's the latest number?
Well, they just admit to 6,000 products. But the problem is that they are they can put it in artificial and natural flavors. We have to tell people, do not use anything processed, because then it's hidden. For instance, if you were to pick up a product and it said vanillin on it, you wouldn't know that aspartame is in it, but they mix it with a sweetener, and it's usually aspartame.
All right, stay there. Yeah, they call it a flavoring. Here we go, back to the full audience. That was on air as well, but this is the full audience. Here we go.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Betty Martini is our guest. You can read all the government reports and private studies and others at her website. She'll give you her site and some other sites here in just a moment. In fact, Betty, do that now, and then let's get into how many products aspartame is really in, what we know, what other governments are saying they know it does. And for those that have problems dealing with this, There have been all sorts of drugs and chemicals they've said aren't bad for you that turn out causing problems, and they remove them. But not now. Comes out that the chemicals in most plastics are estrogen mimicking and endocrine disruptors. They just keep it in the market. It's killed tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands sick now in China from melamine coming into the U.S. China says it's bad, executes people that put it in. Our government says no problem with melamine. Just like with aspartame, they say mercury is good for children in shots when all these major universities show it is the most destructive heavy metal to brain tissue. Causes electrochemical, literally short circuits and explosions. It just keeps cutting through the nerves and causes, well, you can see it under an electron microscope. They're electrochemical. It literally is little explosions in the brain, little electrical shorts going on. So we have them telling us all these poisons are so great, but I can think of no poison worldwide as prolific as aspartame. In the U.S., sodium fluoride and its derivatives and subgroups in the water is probably worse than aspartame just because everybody's exposed to it in all the studies. But with aspartame worldwide and in the U.S. secondarily, probably the most destructive thing we're dealing with. Please continue.
Okay, first of all, I have in front of me the statement from Dr. Deagle about how it's made, and maybe this will help you understand. He says, most people, when asked how aspartame is made, do not have the first step of understanding. While an ER doctor and primary care physician in Augusta in 87 and 88, I was told a number of interesting facts about the adjacent aspartame factory. Bacteria with genes inserted generate a sludge, which is centrifuged to remove the aspartame, and many hundreds of contaminant organic and amino acids are present. We were told not to report illness or workers' compensation issues for fear of being fired by the hospital, now the Augusta Region Medical Center. Many of their employees presented with psychiatric neuropathy conditions, chronic fatigue, and organic cases of loss of cognitive function. This powder from the dried sludge, when then transported for packaging in factories elsewhere in the U.S. before sale is equal, and now the myriad of names of this neurotoxin. And he says they're just vats of toxic sludge, and that's what someone told me in the Augusta factory where somebody dropped dead from it from not wearing protective clothing. What's going on in the around the world now? I lectured in New Zealand when Abby Cormack almost died from Wrigley's aspartame gum, and I want to warn people because after a suit was filed against them because of this in 2004, although it was they got out of it, Wrigley's arrogantly turned around and put it in all but two of their gums. It is the most dangerous product because, as Dr. Roberts wrote a paper on it, it works like nitroglycerin under the tongue, goes through saliva, straight to the brain. And they were about to diagnose her with bipolar until she found out. And I went over and lectured in the medical schools, and now they are petitioning for the ban in New Zealand. In the Philippines, in fact, I just happened to meet their councilman, who is trying to get it banned there. I talked to the California Board of Medicine, and he came in from the Philippines and talked about what was going on there. Currently,
by the way, let me stop you. I just looked up how aspartame is made. I'm on university websites, and it says it is a organic, there's a whole bunch of these, a organic fermentation process. So what Deagle said, I mean, I'd read this before separately, but, I mean, if you just Google it, it's on university sites. And it says they ferment it like beer, so it is bacteria. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's made from bacteria, yes. It's
good
pretty
Lord.
Well known now. The recently, now it's been 2 or 3 years, Parliament, there were 40.
Hold on, here it
members.
Is, genetically engineered bacteria, which are fed these altered amino acids, and over the course of 3 days, the amino acids are harvested and the bacteria destroyed. Yeah, it's true. Oh, my God, I'm reading the actual, there's photos of this. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes, it's absolutely in the records now. But anyway, 47 members of Parliament signed for a ban. So now the European Food Safety Authority is now doing another review, which will end in January. And it would just be wonderful if we could get it banned in Europe. We did try in Hawaii last year, and we had problems with it, but we are trying to get a co-sponsor now to go back through the Hawaiian legislature, and then I testified for the New Mexico House and Senate when they tried to ban it, and the Capitol was just saturated with lobbyists, but they're going to try to do that again this year. So even states in the United States are trying to ban it. Now, here's one of the problems. In 2002, I wrote a citizen's petition for ban. You can find it on the FDA website, 190 pages of evidence. And the law states that they must answer it in 180 days, and they have refused to do it. I mean, it's been 6.5 years. And the reason they refuse and serve above the law is I'm using their own government documents and what they said themselves. They can't answer it. So an attorney told me to go ahead and file an amendment as an imminent health hazard, and I did that in October. That's required by law to be answered within a week or 10 days, and they refused to answer that. That's the big problem. No matter who does it, the Community Nutrition Institute petitioned the FDA to ban it in 86 because so many people were going blind from the free methyl alcohol and having seizures, and it took it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, let me stop you. I'm looking at the manufacturing process here from a university website. We're going to put it up on screen later. They admit they take aspheric acid and phenylalanine, combine it in tanks, then put back a genetically modified bacteria in, then put it into a crystal separator, and then dry it and into a white powder after separating the dead bacteria. And it's admitted that, I mean, they admit mainstream, I'm looking at it, that once it hits 87 degrees, it breaks back into the wood alcohol. Well, your body is, what, 98 degrees? I mean, this is insane. Antifreeze is sweet. Why don't we just start putting that in gum? And answer that question, and then going back to this, why now can't I buy any major bubble gum? I mean, I can go to the shopping center. I can go to a major grocery store, because I like gum sometimes, for breath or whatever, and I can't find one. I have to order it special online that doesn't say aspartame.
Well, let me give you a little bit of good news. First of all, I was talking to someone who makes herbs from the Amazon rainforest some years ago, and I said, look, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to make a safe sweetener, and these products are killing diabetics. And he turned around and made it, and it's called just like sugar, and it has chicory, which has been used for 70 years to improve the health of diabetics, and orange peel, vitamin C, and calcium. And then Dr. Blaylock asked that it be analyzed, and he wrote in his newsletter, the Blaylock Wellness Report, finally, finally, a safe sweetener. And I talked to the CEO, and I said, look, so many people are having the problems with the gum. They're putting it in everything, and it's the most dangerous product. And he said, I promise you by the end of December, we will have a gum free of aspartame made with just like sugar. And I said, while you're at it, how about, on every restaurant table, they have Splenda, which is a chlorocarbon poison, and Equal. And he says, and we'll make packets. So I have no financial association, of course, with the company, but they are getting this month a congressional award for making the first safe sweetener in America. So I'm glad with all this bad news to give you a little bit of good news, that there will be a gum that's safe, because even some of the Wrigley gums that have aspartame in it, they have also have Splenda in it. They have a sulfine potassium, which caused cancer and leukemia in original studies. And there was a study in Liverpool that told about, the combination of all these poisons. I mean, it's just really a chemical feast. And just destroying the brains of our children, reducing IQ.
Well, what we have is chemical companies getting rid of soap and giving us toxic byproducts of the oil industry, which is detergents. What we have is the chemical companies and bio companies getting rid of our sugar and giving us this chemical weapon. They're replacing everything with their poison, and then they own the medical system that then misdiagnoses this and controls people. Why don't you, Betty, start getting into all the doctors and scientists and governors and governments that have come out and admitted that this is so bad?
Well, we've basically got all those records. In fact, if you really want to know about this study, one of the best articles ever written, it's on mpwhi.com, is The Ecologist. They did a 17-page cover story. It's got Rumsfeld's name on the front of it and starts out by telling you that originally aspartame was listed with the Pentagon in an inventory of prospective biochemical warfare weapons submitted to Congress.
Oh, and it accidentally got in all the food, everything else.
And so
population control.
I noticed the Pentagon doesn't want to discuss it with me. But, we've had to start a Mission Possible Aviation. And the reason I did that was because a pilot called me and he said, dumb, I'm not. But I crashed my plane on aspartame. I couldn't make a decision. You know, it destroys memory, which is one of the reasons that it's, escalating Alzheimer's, and it causes confusion. And so Dr. Blake...
Yeah, they're now saying you get Alzheimer's when you're 30 now.
Oh, yes. In fact, one of the hospices called me some years ago and asked why 30-year-old people were getting it. The reason that aspartame interacts with most drugs is because of damage to the mitochondria or life itself. And what that does is make you old. And aspartame knows no age.
That's right. Inside of the cells, the engine of the cells and its programming is the mitochondrial DNA. And they're showing studies that it's damaging the very DNA of the species. Betty, let's continue speaking. This is so vital and we have limited time. For internet listeners and PrisonPlanet.tv viewers, I'm going to skip this break for everybody else. We'll be back. This is just too important. We got to get all this info out in the time we have. Okay, Betty, we're continuing. We've got tens of thousands of listeners and viewers right now, not the millions, but on the web it'll live forever. Let's continue. Go back. Do you have that posted? Because I'd read that years ago and then couldn't find it again. About originally the military, as they listed sodium fluoride as a chemical weapon to control people, how they were listing aspartame when they discovered it back in the 60s, because I did just pull up some of that a minute ago. I'll try to find it. Separately of you mentioning it, I ran into some of it. When the Army first discovered it, I actually ran into that. Tell folks the specifics of that. That's very important.
Okay, first of all, if you want to know it, fact by fact, you can go to Doorway, DORWAY.com, and look for the paper Nutripoison by Alex Constantine, and it will give you all the details. The ecologist also quotes one of the newsletters, and I actually have one of the tapes of a radio program called Aspartame Weapons of War. But I want to tell you the worst case scenario, some of the things that are happening. Dr. Blaylock has written an athlete alert. The athletes are dropping dead from aspartame. And if you remember, Ephedra was taken off the market because the Pilcher, who was in West Palm Beach, dropped dead. And Dr. Roberts called the medical examiner and says, okay, how many diet drinks was he drinking? He didn't know about it, but then an article came out that he was fasting, and then every couple of days, he would just drink Diet Coke all day. And the reason that I'm bringing this up also, because in the movie Sweet Misery, and this is really one of the worst scenarios, Diane Fleming, a sweet Sunday school teacher, was married to an athlete who worked out and was using aspartame and all day long and died of methanol poisoning. And they put her in prison for 30 and 20 years, even though she had taken 3 lie detector tests. Now, it said acute and chronic methanol poisoning, and the doctors wrote affidavits that the autopsy showed, that it was aspartame that caused his death. Recently, a toxicologist did a study. The last thing that he drank, he took some Gatorade and put 3 times the amount of creatine in it, and aspartame interacts with creatine. He was like standing on a ledge, and that's all it took was that 3 times the amount of creatine, and the toxicological report by Dr. Albiotti showed that it caused his immediate death. And this is what's going on. That woman's been in prison for 6 years, and even though doctors have written affidavits, we haven't been able to get her out. And Dr. Bowen says, here's what happens, is that the liver can take so much of this methanol when it converts to formaldehyde, so it kicks it back into the bloodstream. And there's going to be a book written about her, but I want people to know about Diane Fleming and to read some of the articles. They're on WNHO.com. There is Sudden Cardiac Death by Dr. Blaylock, and sudden death by Dr. Roberts. Basically, what happens is aspartame causes an irregular heart rhythm and interacts with all cardiac medication, damages the cardiac conduction system, and causes sudden death. And even little children and students are actually dropping dead from it. And two parliamentarians in Europe, not realizing why people were dropping dead, have petitioned WHO to actually call it sudden death syndrome so they can track it.
All right, here we go. Back to the full audience.
Get up,
if you just
up.
Google aspartame,
stand up for your right.
Army chemical biological
get up,
weapon,
get up.
You'll discover how it was developed in the
stand
U.S.
Right.
Chemical weapon to brain damage subject populations. And I've got the London Independent here from the 20th of, July 1999. World's top sweetener is made with GM bacteria. And it is a chemical weapon derived from a biological weapon mix. And, of course, that's why it's in most of your food you buy prepared. Because they're exterminating us. I mean, you can't imagine this. You can't make this up. You can't. Everything they do, oh, the GMO just so happens to sterilize the mice that eat it. And then the humans get it and our fertility's dropping. Oh, melamine just so happens to kill kids. Oh, the one type of plastic they chose out of hundreds to be standardized, the main plastic, sterilizes people and gives you cancer. Oh, and there's an Army report on that. Army figures this out, they put it in your food. Now, does that mean the average person in the Army's involved? No, it's the eugenicist. It's the eugenicist, and that's why there's dead kids all over your neighborhood from cancer. That's why 23-year-old women are dying of cancer. That's why it's exploding. And they're Betty Martini, please continue.
Okay. When you mention that article, I have to tell you a story about that written by on the front page of The Independent. Not only on the front page, but above the royal wedding. And the way that came to be is that one of the aspartame companies actually had on their website the formula for genetic engineering, and people just didn't realize what it was. And I was talking to the Independent, and I told them, I says, you know, you people don't like genetic engineering. Why don't you help us with aspartame? And they said, prove it, and we'll help you. And so when I put that online, they immediately took the website down, but it was too late. I had printed it out and faxed it to the Independent in the UK, and they kept their word, put it on the front page above the royal wedding so that all of the UK could find out about it.
Yeah, that's what they report, is this is directly from the aspartame manufacturer, so our source is that.
Yeah, Monsanto could not deny it because there was on the website showing the actual formula for this. And another thing that people should know really worries me about what's happening to the vets, because they're now reporting how many of them are going blind. You know that's from aspartame. But if you get on WNHO.net and go back to 2003, you can read a report I wrote, The Case for Aspartame Disease Being Gulf War Illness and Lou Gehrig's, because the government back then was saying, you know, they're crazy. And then they did their own study, and I had told them it can precipitate MS and cause Lou Gehrig's. Dr. James Bowen has Lou Gehrig's from aspartame. And when they did their own studies, they found it was Lou Gehrig's. So now, you know, they're chewing gum and drinking it in Iraq. Here they are, you know, fighting for our country and, you know, being killed by aspartame.
Well, I mean, you know, I mentioned that I know this is a setup. I mean, because I see the same story over and over again. Fighting this for 17 years, interviewing scientists, doctors, all these government reports, you know, you helping get governments to ban it around the world or restrict it. I mean, do you believe that this was done by design?
I cannot say. I mean, there's no way to say. But I do know that Searle knew it, because I have talked to so many informants and people from Searle. They said they all knew that it was poison, and they knew it before they put it on the market.
The Army discovers it and says it's a chemical weapon, and then suddenly it's Rumsfeld and it's in all our food. I mean, you know.
You know what they call it now? Rumsfeld plague.
That's right, Rumsfeld disease.
Yes. The medical text is aspartame disease, and Dr. Roberts says we're not going to call it Rumsfeld disease because they usually honor doctors. So it's called Rumsfeld's plague, and the Idaho Observer wrote a great, fantastic article on biochemical weaponry and Rumsfeld's legacy. And incidentally, somebody has written a book on Rumsfeld that even tells the whole story. Rumsfeld, his rise, fall, and catastrophic legacy.
Well, listen, he's the one that gave nuclear reactors as the head of ABB to North Korea. He's the one that got the Terminator genes and GMO approved. It's like whatever is evil, he gave the bioweapons of Saddam. It's like a poof of smoke, and he's like the devil, and he's there at the scene of everything.
I know. And this is, they actually told this. In fact, I sent this to Atlanta Magazine when they interviewed me, and they actually put this in their story right here in the home of Coca-Cola. And when the reporter came out, you know, I said, you're really going to write a story about aspartame here in the home of Coca-Cola? And it turned out the reporter was a victim. And then the photographers came out, and I said, who do you work for? He said, mostly for Coke. I said, and you're going to take a picture of...
Hold on. Here we go.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN
right.
Radio Network.
Let's skip this break, too, because we've got to go soon. I want you to get John Watkins' enough respect on in like 5 minutes and just let him know we're going to say bye to Betty on the other side, okay?
Okay.
Let me talk to Betty again.
Here I am, Alex.
Hey, Betty, I probably interviewed you 10 times years ago. What, it's been 5 years or so since I had you on?
I think it has been that long.
Well, you know, I hit subjects a lot, then I get off of them, and then I thought, you know, I've got a whole new giant crop of listeners, bigger than ever, and we haven't warned them, and this is something where we can take action. We can stop drinking fluoridated water. We can stop drinking and eating aspartame. We can educate other people. We can save a lot of lives. And so I want to get you back up for a full 2 hours in the near future. Sorry to cut you a bit short today. I got behind with the other guest. And then I'm going to have Dr. Blaylock on the next few weeks. And anybody else you want to recommend, why don't you email Aaron with two A's, aaron@infowars.com, the different doctors and scientists you think I should have on. And I'll do 10 or 15 interviews in the next few months because, you know, I'm just sticking now with what can I tell people where they can help themselves that we know is, you know, bad that's happening to them, solutions. And not just that, you were such a great example, and I'm not trying to toot your horn. I mean, people should model after you and others of somebody getting mad, getting upset, taking action, and really having a huge effect in the 17 years you've been doing this. Because as bad as it is, at least you have warned tens of millions of people to themselves stay away from it or to know what's happening. But then in closing, we're going to come back with about 5 minutes left with you, if you can do it. How do we... Well, I mean, we know the patent ended, so now it's even cheaper, so everybody's using it. I mean, it's in everything now. And as you said, they call it artificial or natural flavoring. I mean, how do you find this out? I guess you just don't eat anything processed?
Well, yes, we have to. And incidentally, Dr. Blaylock wrote me a paper, what to do if you've used aspartame, so I can give this to people. And we have an aspartame information list on the banner on mpwhi.com. So people who have questions and need something, they can get on that list and keep up with it and have all their questions answered. In fact, even the Idaho Observer, wanting to help, now publishes the Artificially Sweetened Times 24-page booklets that keep current on aspartame for distribution.
Good. I'll have them on. So email me those guys and recommend that. Betty, we're going to come back in about 20 seconds.
Okay.
I'm just doing 5 more minutes with her. Do you have the next guest?
Yes, Watkins is all set.
Mr. Watkins.
Oh, yes.
Of the UK, not Mr. Watson. No. Okay, here we go. Oh, I forgot to ask him, what city in England is he in? Pop in and ask him, and then pop in and tell me.
Okay, just over the air.
Yep.
Okay.
Here we go, folks.
As we've been trudging on the wine press, much too long, rebel.
The Babylon system is a vampire.
Babylon system is the vampire. Yeah.
Sucking the blood.
Sucking the
sucking the children day by day. Melamine, aspartame, mercury. All of these things. And then they control the hospitals and the medical system. The doctors don't know. They're compartmentalized. Final segment with Betty Martini, and then we're going to spend a little bit of time. Really honored to have him today. John Wadkins, one of the most talented YouTube directors out there. Wish this guy lived in Austin, Texas, worked with me on films. So he is coming up here. Well, Betty, we're going to have you back up for 2 hours in the near future. I'm going to have Dr. Blaylock back on and a lot of other folks. But in closing, thousands and thousands of products. I can't find gum that doesn't have it. They call it natural, unnatural sweeteners. They won't let you. They're camouflaging it now. And they didn't know before. They certainly know now it's deadly, this army chemical weapon made out of genetically engineered bacteria they discovered in the 60s. Dealing with that issue finally, and then briefly the addiction. I had somebody down here this weekend who's a great guy, but I was watching him addicted to Diet Cokes. He had to have them. He wanted me to run around and get him Halls, but he said they must be sugar-free. And he was acting like a drug addict when I would bring him the aspartame. And I've seen this with people who get off of aspartame and literally go through all sorts of withdrawals. Dr. Blaylock, medical doctor, and others have developed, and you have this free on your website and give out those sites, some systems that will help people detox. This is like many poisons, it's also very addictive.
Why it is addictive? It's that free methyl alcohol that causes chronic methanol poisoning. This affects the dopamine system of the brain and causes the addiction. And, one day I was talking with Dr. Deagle about the fact that when people are that addicted, they're no longer rational. And he says, well, that's because it first affects the frontal lobes of the brain, and it's like talking to somebody with a lobotomy. And a very good case of that is Wayne Shore's wife, when one of the doctors found out and said, oh, we have found out it's aspartame. Diabetics can't heal. We can save your foot. Just get off of aspartame. And she said, I'm too addicted. Chop it off. And they did. And that is not rational. But this is the problem that we have is this addiction. And Dr. Roberts has written a very, very long article about it that's on the doorway under miscellaneous Doctors Speak Out, the Townsend Letter for Doctor, that explains it in great detail. Alex, are you still
yes,
there?
Yes, Betty. I'm just sitting back. You know, I have a penchant for interrupting, so I wanted you to continue.
Yeah. So this is one of the most serious problems, and if anyone, gets in touch with us, my email is bettym19@manspring.com. We can send them Dr. Blaylock's information about what they have to do. They have to stay on magnesium the rest of their life because it protects the heart and the brain from excitotoxins. And Dr. Blaylock says you have to flush your system out with distilled water. You can't use chlorine or fluoride, and he gives a great list of the things that can help and heal the immune system and tells you all the things to avoid. And it's a wonderful paper, and anybody on it really should get in touch, and they can stay up to date on this list, and they'll get all the information that they want and all the references and the books and movies and anything that they need that can help. One of the greatest things is getting the information to the doctors, because once a doctor knows, then he can save the lives of thousands. It's like my neurologist said, when he realized who I was, he said I had a patient, he said having seizures, he said that we tried everything there was on the market. He had no idea that it interacts with all anti-seizure medication. Found out that she was drinking a case of Diet Coke a day, got her off of it. She went crazy. She had to put her in a mental hospital. 2 weeks out of the mental hospital, she was off of aspartame, no problems, and the seizures stopped. So it's very, very important.
It's a chemical weapon. It's a chemical weapon. Betty Martini, we salute you. We appreciate you for warning people, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you, Alex.
You bet. There she goes. Great lady. We're going to be doing several more shows in a long series on this in the next 3 months, because I had covered this probably 100 times, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years ago, and now we haven't covered it in so long. I wanted to give you the evidence, and yet again, a government chemical weapon made by genetically engineered bacteria. They know exactly what they're doing. All right, shifting gears. Enough Respect website on YouTube that we know of has 20, 30 million. You mean, some of his videos have 5, 6 million views per short videos that he makes. Just an absolutely amazing individual. And then his videos get copied to hundreds of other video sharing sites. And so, really, we don't know how many tens of millions more have seen his material just in 2 short years on the Internet. And he lives in the United Kingdom in Cardiff. He's made some great videos with my material that I've really been flattered that he's done that. He has stood up for us when YouTube and Google have been censoring us, banning our videos, knocking our hit counts down to knock us out of the top 10 so that people don't see us there on the front page of YouTube or Google. He has put out videos. He won the three people that won. We had three different contests. He won one of the contests for the best internet censorship video a few months ago. He won the first round of contest exposing the different cocktail, the different ways. There's a lot of different ways they're shutting down, regulating the web. Obama has announced upgrading the internet. That is internet to the consortium to start shutting down the old free open web that we told you about. They're going to have free internet wireless nationwide with taxpayer money paying for it. Nothing's free. It's going to be highly censored with only a few thousand sites of the billions that you can actually visit. Canada's openly saying they're going to restrict the web. Australia, headline in their newspapers, Chinese-style censorship, banning all alternative sites, basically. It's here. It's happening. And he had all these top honors of top director in the UK, one of the top directors in the U.S., the most hits, the most views. He was up there in the top 20 in every category. So they basically restricted him, knocked him off the front page. And again, we don't care about having little blue ribbons for being number one. We don't care about being on the front page for, the fame or whatever. It's that that's where the billions of people that visit YouTube and Google go to do their viewing. It's like the TV guy. We know they've been restricting my hit counts, my views, because when you upload a Google video, you can still see what your hits and views are. When we complained a year ago about them knocking us from 10 million, 20 million views on a video down to zero, they'd build back up in millions in a day, they'd knock it down again. They just made those numbers secret. Unless you're the person that posted it, you can still see it. We saw them censor Fabled Enemies a few months ago when it came out. It hit number one within 2 days, and they just erased our numbers. There was over 1 million views because we uploaded it. We could see that. Only people that could, us and Google, before it was public. And a year ago, they changed it, and we saw them internally knock it off. And we also got screenshots of them knocking us off the front page. And I have asked people like Enough Respect, being censored, being cheated is horrible, but it lets you know you're hurting them. So and please, Enough Respect, do not leave YouTube. And all of you, when you get attacked, know it means you're hurting them. Just start uploading to 2 or 3 other backup sites, other smaller video services. People are on my message board at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com saying, why do you care? Forget YouTube and Google. Well, YouTube's like number 4 or 5 on the web. Google's number 2 on the web. Yeah, there are other sites getting millions of views a day total. But you can get millions of views per video for your video on YouTube and Google. That's 90-something percent of the video sharing area. That's where we need to be. We don't retreat from the field of battle. Enough Respect is calling on everyone. Enough, I'd love it if you made another video, including just overall internet censorship and how this is the front lines, this fight at YouTube. I would love to promote that, push that myself, but we're playing in the background. The challenge you've got for December 19th to make your video number one overall on YouTube and then to show people if they do censor and keep you off the front page as they do my videos. And again, this is how it all starts. We know that Lieberman and others in the Congress with the Violent Radicalization Act have said, we want to censor the web. We want the government to tell you what to take down, what to put up. We see YouTube shifting away from user-made videos that have made it so popular to fluff and corporate videos on the front page. They did that this weekend. There was a huge backlash, so they stopped it for the time being. But they say on their rules page that they're probably going to go back to this. So they let us build YouTube and Google up, then they kick us off of it. And so without further ado, we go to John Watkins in Cardiff in the United Kingdom. And I've never talked to you in person. John, we appreciate you coming on with us.
Hi, Alex. Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show. It is a real pleasure to be able to speak with you. I mean, yeah, you were so right. Everything you said is just so right. You know, this censorship issue is something that we really can't afford to ignore because, you know, it's our free speech we're talking about, really. And I noticed this, you know, the first time I actually noticed this kind of censorship taking place on the Internet was about 2 years ago when Google started censoring movies like Terrorstorm and Loose Change. And the censorship was just so crude and so obvious and so sneaky that it was just infuriating to watch. You know, I mean, for example, as you said, resetting the hit counters, you know, on certain videos like Terrorstorm to knock them out of the top 10 list. And, you know, when I saw that, first of all, I thought, well, maybe it is some kind of software error, but it was happening so often, and it only seemed to happen to Truth videos. And another thing I noticed was that on Google Video, they would display the top 10 videos on their homepage. And now, at this time, 2 years ago, I think Terrorstorm and Loose Change were there in the top 10. They displayed every other video that was in the top 10 on their homepage, except Terrorstorm and Loose Change. And again, you know, that set a few alarm bells ringing, you know, in my mind. Then in February of 2007, a couple of months later, Google pulled the infamous BBC video where they reported that Building 7 had collapsed, 20 minutes before it actually did collapse. And, you know, every time somebody tried to upload that video, it was pulled within minutes. And it really was laughable to see. You know, you could sense the panic at Google. They didn't want that video, you know, going out there, basically. Then when people, you know, started to wise up to those tricks, what they did then was just remove the hit counters completely from all videos. So we couldn't really verify for ourselves which videos were actually the most popular. We just basically had to take Google's word for it.
And so, YouTube is now moving in that same direction, as is MySpace and many others, censoring at every level. So it's here. It's happening, and they shouldn't hold themselves out as this free, open community. And then when our videos don't violate any of their rules or terms, they go in and specifically target them for censorship. This is false advertising. This is fraud.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. It is fraudulent, you know. And it was this censorship that I witnessed 2 years ago on Google that made me want to start up a YouTube channel. And back then, Google didn't own YouTube, and there wasn't that much censorship going on YouTube at that time. There probably was some, but it was nothing like it is today. You know, so at that time I thought, you know, I'll put out some videos on YouTube and hopefully try and get this information out there to people, you know. And so, you know, it's thanks to you, Alex, and people like you that, you know, I've been able to expand my worldview. And when you realize the manipulation that's taking place, you know, due to this globalist elite, the first thing you want to do is inform other people. And that's what I'm trying to do on YouTube, is just to get you know, info out there to wake people up. And now it's become so difficult. And it only seems to be after Google bought YouTube, that is when all this censorship seemed to kick in. Because it didn't really exist back, you know, 2 years ago. But now it's rife on YouTube right now. And, you know,
and that's because we're going into a worldwide controlled depression. The banks are engineering it. They're getting ready to launch new wars. They just tried to start World War III between Pakistan and India, as Paul Watson covered earlier. We need you to make one on that enough. Because you're absolutely right. It's all coming to a head. They have the Violent Radicalization Act they're trying to pass. They list architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth with Al-Qaeda terrorists. They're getting desperate. They're the crooks. And higher-ups are saying, shut them down, but that's actually great news because it shows we're having an effect.
Exactly, that's right. You know, and I think it scares them that we're getting information out there to the masses. And, you know, I mean, on YouTube, the methods of censorship now are just so blatant. You know, one method is where, I mean, they remove videos under the excuse that they contain inappropriate content. And this has happened to me a few times, but
I'll have videos that don't even show a woman in a short skirt, and they get banned for inappropriate. Or people creating fake Alex Jones accounts. Then they themselves go in and complain on me. Stuff gets shut down. There's people also editing my videos together where I'm saying racist things. But, yeah, tell folks about some of the other tactics.
Well, as I say, you know, they remove videos under the pretense that they contain inappropriate content. But YouTube doesn't give you any explanation as to what it is that they deem to be inappropriate. So you're just left in the dark, basically. And, you know, but one thing I noticed with the videos that they removed of mine under the pretense of, you know, inappropriate content, the one thing they all had in common was that they all chalked up a lot of views within the first 12 hours. I think it was something like 20,000 views within the first 12 hours. And so it seems to me that Google doesn't mind us uploading videos that sort of expose what's happening with this globalist agenda, but they don't seem to like it when those videos, you know, gather a lot of views very quickly, because obviously...
Yeah, here's an example. You made that one about Question Your Reality. It got 200,000 views in one day. It was number one, and then suddenly... The comments kept going up by the thousands, but suddenly it was frozen for a few days, frozen in its hits to knock it out of the top.
That's right. That's exactly what I do, what they do. Well, what I noticed with that video was it generated a huge number of hits. Then all of a sudden it just sort of stopped. It was like, it was weird, basically. It just didn't look right. You know, one minute it's getting thousands of hits a day, and then the next minute it's just going up by about 100 or something like that a day. And
are you kidding? You got 200,000 in one day.
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, that's just one example of what's happening on YouTube at the moment. And it only seems to happen with truth videos. It doesn't seem to happen with all the mainstream sort of stuff, you know, the Britney Spears and all the rest of it. It's only the kind of videos that I upload. And it's not just me that it's happening to. It's happening to so many different channels on YouTube. And
well, now Obama is announcing Internet, too. That's what his tens of billions into that is, to create the new web, force all of us off. As Internet 2 has declared, now is the fight. When we come back in the final segment with the creator of the Nuff Respect channel, YouTube/NuffRespect.com. We link to it all the time at InfoWars.com. John Wadkins. There's so many other great channels, like the Alex Jones channel that a guy runs, and they ran off Gatekeeper Invasion. They run off so many other great folks. To all the other wonderful people out there, you go make your own channels. You've got video talent. You go out there and put out whatever you think's important. Don't let them silence the fight against the New World Order. We're talking to John Wadkins, an amazing individual. Final segment with him and a challenge he's got for you. Stay with us.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Newspapers are declaring and filing for bankruptcy all over the United States. New York Times is broke. Headline, mortgages, their headquarters, and cash crunch. They're going to strike back. Obama's new Internet czar is going to restrict free speech and set up Internet 2, where you have a subdomain, just like Nuff Respect has with YouTube, so they can shut him down. I would have a huge YouTube, but I don't have the money for people. I mean, I'm spending $20,000 a month right now on bandwidth, just with PrisonPlanet.tv and my websites. So you have to understand that this is how they're going to do it. The future web, you're going to have all your data on a separate server. Then they're going to control what you have access to. Nuff Respect, you're a great interview. Let me set you up for like a full hour sometime next week to talk about your great films, who you are, getting other people involved, the big event you're having December 19th. That said, I just want to commend you and thank you for all you've done. You're another testament. I mean, today we've talked about retraining Americans how to shoot, the history, the founding fathers, then don't drink the aspartame, how it's deadly. Now we're fighting against censorship. I mean, the example of everybody I've had on today, and you've reached more than anybody in just 2 years on the web, reaching tens of millions conservatively with just the one or two, three videos a month that you make, I salute you, and you are the model of the type of person that's going to turn this world around.
Oh, thanks, Alex. I mean, that's really nice of you to say that. Yeah, I mean, it's thanks to you. You know, if it wasn't for you, there would be no Nuff Respect channel on YouTube. It's because of you that I got into doing all this. Because once you realize, you know, the manipulation that's taking place, you know, in this world, the one thing you want to do is inform other people, and that's all I'm trying to do on YouTube, is just try and wake people up, basically. You know, and YouTube is thwarting my efforts every step of the way, you know. So many different methods of censorship, and they're all really crude and sneaky, and it kind of upsets me, because it's not just me it's happening to. It's so many people on YouTube who are just trying to do the same as what I'm doing, you know, and they make it really hard for us, you know. There's just so many different ways that they're doing this now. you know, and some are more blatant than others. But, you know, I've seen it enough times to know, you know, I mean, some things you could just brush off as a software error, for example. But, you know, some of the things I've seen, you know, it is definite censorship. There's no other way to describe it, really. I mean, another method that they use to censor people, it basically is to suspend people's accounts for no reason at all. And I get emails every single day from people who've had their channels suspended or somebody who's had their channel suspended. And when this happens, you lose all your subscribers, you lose all your friends, all your videos. And then when you try and start up another channel, nobody really knows for sure.
That's right. So we need to create a doppelgangers. You need to create, when they used to hack my websites, that's why I have so many. You just create more and promote them all and let people know you're under attack. In the minute and a half we've got left, and I'm going to say to you, I'm going to say bye to you at the end of the show here privately, so don't hang up. Tell us what's coming up the 19th, the challenge video you've got up there right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's from a user on YouTube called Legitimacy Coalition. And basically, he's organizing this thing where what we want to do is get everybody to basically boycott YouTube on December the 19th. Just not log in to YouTube at all, not use it in any way, shape, or form for that day. And hopefully, if enough of us do that, it'll have an impact. And, you know, we've got to make our voices heard in some way. So, you know, these are the things we're going to have to do now to try and get YouTube to sort of at least...
And we have to boycott it to save it. And again, why are we there? Because it's the biggest place where we can virally reach the people. John Watkins, we'll talk to you and the maker of that channel coming up next week for a full hour, if you can do it. Stay there.
Yeah, no problem.
You bet. It's been great having you on.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks very much.
You bet. Stay there. I'm going to say bye to you when the show ends. Folks, I had Paul Watson on. I had Betty Martini. I had the guest on about the militias. And, of course, I had Enough Respect on. Be sure and listen to the retransmission now on the internet at InfoWars.com. They're not censoring us yet. They sure are trying. Spread the word about the free podcast. God bless you all.